It's time for Twink this week in Google. Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham are both here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Apple event, the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. I've got one in my pocket right now. Some interesting ideas about Equifax and what we should do going forward. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 422, recorded Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. The Missing Link. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/twig and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by LegalZoom. Grow your business and let LegalZoom help out with all the legal stuff. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter Twig in the referral box at checkout. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show we cover. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to shout. Did I wake you?
Yeah, you did. We played. I was having quite a nice nap, and there came Leo.
It's time for Twig. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's grumpy from just waking up from his nap. Hey, Jeff, professor of journalism at CUNY, blogger at Buzz Machine.
Good to see you.
Author of many a book. Good to see you. You survived September 11th.
Yeah.
Does it still send a chill up your spine?
Yeah, I haven't done it every year, but I went there. I do that.
Yeah.
Took pictures of the spots where I was when the major event happened.
Oh, do that every year?
Not every, but almost.
Oh, that's neat. Have you been in the museum yet?
I don't think I can do it.
Yeah, I was talking to a firefighter who said the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. It's very emotional. It's really emotional. I was in tears most of the time.
The one, besides health conditions, the one big impact on me personally is that I am now, this is really weird. I've never said this out loud before, but I find myself almost unable to control emotions in ridiculously manipulative tearjerker moments.
You know what? That's not the 9/11. That's age.
That's age.
I think that's age.
It's the same thing. And remember George H.W. Bush? He was very teary. He would cry. I do. I cry at everything. Lisa goes, stop crying.
It's like being a pregnant woman. I'll just tell you.
Yes.
When I was pregnant, I cried.
I have the belly for that too.
Very emotional.
Oh, well, there you go.
But it is a tearful thing to go there and see, you know, the melted fire truck. And it's funny. You know what really saddens me more? It's not the people who, the victims in the building, as much as I really get choked up when I think about the rescue workers, the FDNY and the NYPD that ran into the building.
And their faces are burned into my memory.
Yeah, the priest who was giving last rites and then himself got killed. I mean, it's just those things really start the waterworks. It's a beautiful museum, though. I mean, it really is well done, but it's made to make you cry. I mean, they have phone calls.
Yeah, that's why.
They're playing audio from phone calls. And I mean, it's very heavy, but what a beautiful memorial. So you go see the memorial.
I've done that. I waited a while to do that too.
Yeah.
Because at first when you went, it was worse than airport security to get in.
Yeah. Now it's wide open.
Now it's wide open.
Stacey, we missed you. Stacey Higginbotham is back from her jaunt to Intel, right?
Cydia. And Qualcomm.
Qualcomm, Cydia. How was that?
Both were very illuminating. I learned a lot.
Qualcomm is and we should mention Qualcomm is now a sponsor. They have ads on our network for their Snapdragon Gigabit LTE chip. And they also ran ads right before the Apple event. They're in an interesting tussle with Apple.
It's because Apple stopped using their chip and
Apple,
to build their
I think
own.
Apple doesn't use any Qualcomm stuff anymore, right? Mm-mm. Not even the radios.
I don't think so. After that lawsuit and licensing fees, although they might, just the iPhone, if it falls
if they're
back
using
to
a CDMA,
CDMA
radio, they have to use
yeah,
Qualcomm.
But I assume you still have 3G and a Verizon so iPhone.
Right,
so unless
right.
they fall back to nothing, which
right.
would suck.
I don't know.
They
That's
have
an
to be using Qualcomm
question.
Chips.
Yeah. Qualcomm had a blog post, in which they, I should show you. Android firsts. This was the day before the Apple event. Brought to you by Qualcomm. Of course, there was no surprise, really, what Apple announced. We had all already seen the leak. So they're responding directly to the features Apple is going to be announcing tomorrow, the day after this blog post. Fast charging, quick charging, dual camera technology, iris head authentication, facial recognition, fingerprint under display, augmented reality, depth sense. This is all stuff, OLED display, 4K display, gigabit LTE. This is all stuff that Apple, touted in its new iPhone X, and it was all innovations that appeared first in Android, thanks to Qualcomm. I think that's really, but they're locked in a major lawsuit, and
yes,
yeah, withholding payments and all sorts of stuff.
Well, I think, and here's a question. And when I talked to Qualcomm, this was mostly a tech visit. We did not discuss the lawsuits because they can't discuss the lawsuits.
Right.
So. You can smile and ask, and they will say, hey, we can't talk about
That's
that.
A different building. Would you like to go there you. Right now?
But China, when they started fighting this, and then South Korea again went after Qualcomm for their patents and the licensing fees they were charging, it opened the door because Qualcomm actually, to get into China, had to accept some of the constraints. And so then, of course, everyone else is like, oh, hey, I don't want to make such high patent payments to you, too, or high licensing payments to you, too.
Right.
So, okay. Qualcomm has had a good run as a licensing company.
And it's not like they're a patent troll. They didn't buy patents and then sue over them. They're all things they invented, right? I mean, it's not.
Well, yes, they invented it, but they also were very strategic in buying companies that have patents as well.
Okay.
In the question is basically, are they fair and reasonable when they were like under the state? And it has been years since I've delved into the Qualcomm patent wars. So there are issues of what terms did they participate in standards organizations with? Since they have only these patents, are they like licensing them fairly, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a bunch of really nitty gritty legal stuff there. It's not as exciting as the stuff I talked about with
it. No, really, it really isn't. And there is no legal definition of fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory patent terms. That's something that people just agreed to. It's a voluntary commitment, not a legal commitment. So you could say, well, they're not adhering to FRAND, mm-hmm. but that's voluntary. And maybe they feel their licenses are worth more. I don't know. And I wouldn't even want to weigh in on this because I don't even know if they're adhering to FRAND or not. I don't understand.
Yeah, because you would have to. So it is to participate in certain standards organizations, you have to be like, yes, I will. They establish a FRAND benchmark.
Right.
So, but I don't know, again, so long since I've dealt with this. And they also, I believe they bundled some of their radios. They integrated some of their radios. So you had to buy and pay licensing on, which is another
but
issue.
And I'm sure they would argue, yeah, well, it's a system on a chip. Of course we bundled it. You want us to unbundle it?
Right. This is what Qualcomm does.
It's a system on a chip.
They can go, blush.
Blush. That's why you get such a great deal and so much power, because it's all in there. It's all in that system. Well, anyway, so I'm glad you had a good time, and I'm surprised you didn't stick around for the Apple event. You could have killed two birds with one stone.
I wanted to come home and see my family before I went gallivanting off to Vegas next week and
what are you
San
doing
Francisco
in Vegas?
The week after that.
Oh, you're going to Mobile World Congress in Frisco.
No. I'm doing a event for some friends of mine in San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
And then Vegas is a user group for an industrial internet company.
Work hard. Aren't we impressed, Jeff, at how she is an intrepid reporter. Stacey is.
And an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Kind of have to work harder if you're doing it for yourself, don't you? Really?
I put all that hard work onto Andrew. That's his job.
No, otherwise, you're doing all the reporting. No, you're doing it all. Yeah. You're doing the work. I'm impressed. That's why we have you on, because then I could say, well, Stacey, what's going on? What does this mean, Stacey? Tell us. Well,
only on the IoT or 5G.
I don't know. No. Bad in life.
So did you both watch the Apple event?
I watched it while working out. It was my...
That's perfect. Perfect.
If they mentioned that
Apple Watch then said, hey, your heart rate is abnormally high.
I don't have an... I'm not an Apple girl. I am not that lady. So...
I do see more and more Apple Watches, and I was actually quite impressed with the Apple Watch improvements in the Series 3, including cellular, and you can make and place phone calls, make and take phone calls on the new phone. It also has some additional fitness stuff that people will welcome, things like calculating your resting heart rate, monitoring your sudden acceleration. It will warn you if your heart rate's gone up and you don't seem to be moving. Things like that. I think that's all great stuff. I think they announced, and this was a very unclear, very Apple-y kind of announcement, that they were the number one watch company, because I noticed that number two was Rolex. So it was clearly not unit sales they were talking about. It must have been dollar sales.
Yeah.
They are the top in the fitness tracker market. They took a lot of market share away from Fitbit. Actually, a lot of people took market away from Fitbit.
Yeah, but that was my reaction seeing the Apple announcement, is that's it. It's over for all the other fitness bands.
There will always be people who don't want to buy into Apple's ecosystem.
And you do have to buy an iPhone to use it. It's not usable without an iPhone.
Right. Yeah. And I, right now, guys, my phone died right before.
Oh.
What are you going to get?
I don't know. I've got my spare iPhone.
So you can wait a little bit.
Yes.
Because I think it would behoove us all to wait till October 4th or 5th whenever Google announces the Pixel 2.
Yep. That's what I'm waiting for.
But I am in love with the Note 8.
Ooh,
big. It's a beautiful phone. It's big. It's tall. It's not wide. And it's a little bit bigger, but not hardly at all bigger than the S8 Plus. It's just a tenth of an inch bigger diagonally.
Does Lisa have one?
She's an iPhone person. She's not an Android person. Okay. She has an iPhone 7 Plus, but that's a 5.5-inch screen. This is a 6.3-inch screen almost exactly the same size as a 7 Plus. No, but it's the same size as a 7 Plus.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But guys, your pockets are bigger, so you're like, I can still stick it in my pocket.
She loves the 7 Plus. She's completely happy with it. She likes a big phone. She likes the cameras. In the 7 Plus, I do too. This has dual cameras as well. It's very similar in some ways to the 7 Plus. Has a live focus feature that's kind of interesting. Let me see if I can do it upside down and backwards. So it zooms in a little bit, and then it has a slider. And I don't know if I can actually do this, but I can bring the background into and out of focus depending for the portrait.
Oh.
And you do that live. You know, that's, Apple has that in their portrait mode. But then Apple leapfrogged them. Then the iPhone 8, 8 Plus and 10 will have a new lighting mode, which is really cool, where you can change.
That is gorgeous.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And I think the interesting thing about that is, in order to do that, they took part of that new A11 Bionic chip. They took a chunk and said, this is going to be for the camera. And that's where Apple has an advantage over Qualcomm, over Samsung, over anybody. They designed their own silicon. Yeah, maybe they started with the ARM platform years ago, but they have 1,000 chip designers working at Apple. And now they do their own GPUs. This is the first year they've done their own GPUs. And they design their own silicon. And there are more than 1 billion transistors in this A11. Enough so that they could say, this part here, that's the camera. So they dedicate hardware, silicon, to camera processing. That's pretty amazing.
So that's actually, that's the way things are going now in general. So Qualcomm, if you look at its drone reference designs, they've, and I just know this for a fact because I was sitting there talking to them about their chips, but everyone is designing, there are certain core features that you're going to design into silicon. Your camera has been there for a while. What you're going to start seeing next is DSPs dedicated to voice. So wake words, that kind of thing.
Apple mentioned something called an ISP as well, which doesn't stand for Internet Service Provider, but is it a machine learning chip? I think it was.
Yeah, that's their AI chip, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
So that's this is what's interesting is you now have so many. It's an image and signal processor, or no? It's image and signal processing group. So you now have so much extra silicon because the die. You know, we've shrunk the die sizes down so much. You get so many transistors. You have enough room to dedicate parts of the chip to different processes. I think this is fascinating.
Well, it's more, I mean, it's so essential because when you're at this point in time, we don't need more gigahertz, right? We're not optimizing for performance. General performance. We're optimizing for battery life and performance. So what happens is it makes sense once you have a function that is integral to what your device is. So a camera on a phone now is integral. You wouldn't buy a phone without a camera. Okay, like five of you might. But it makes sense to say, okay, let's put this in hardware so we can eke out the most power savings for the best quality. And that's exactly where we're going. And it's super fascinating because if you talk to the chip guys, what they're designing today is the stuff that 5 years they're believing is going to be integral to your phone. Wow. Maybe 4 years. It's so cool.
And I love it that there's a competition between Apple and Samsung and Qualcomm. Google doesn't. Google's not making these chips. Google's using Qualcomm.
Why is it chip side, right? Chip side alone.
I wonder if Google
will, though, right?
So my speculation, and I could be proven wrong, or not proven wrong, I might just be wrong.
Well, that would prove you wrong.
Yes, that Google is, they have to be investigating making their own chips cell phones. I mean, they've done it for embedded, for cell phones, but also for things like IoT type stuff. So they've got, where they have their hardware, I feel like they've got to be doing something there. Chromecast would be, I guess, a good place to start because they sell so many. Because you do, to design your own silicon, you really need to have massive sales.
Well, look at this story from your former colleague, Janko Rutgers. Google, in June, hired a veteran chip architect away from Apple and is now looking to build its own chips for future versions of its Pixel phone.
And that gives it the ability to control security updates the way that, like, Apple can, so they could keep the phone working or secured and supported over a longer period of time. I mean,
so this is Manu Gulati, who had been at Apple for 8 years doing chip design. He is now Google's lead SoC architect, system on a chip architect. So I think that pretty much tells you nailed it. Google is going to make their own silicon. I wonder if we'll see that in the Pixel 2. That would be very interesting. They always said that the Pixel was a rushed kind of stopgap phone, and that wasn't what Google really wanted to do. Seriously, everybody's very interested. The one rumor I really hate, and I hope it's not true, is that they're going to abandon the headphone jack on the Pixel 2.
Oh, God, no, yeah.
No, it's so nice to have competition among features like that. Like, I like my headphone jack because I never remember to charge all my stuff. And I know that Apple now has their charging mat that one day
they
you
finally
might be able
have
to buy.
Qi charging. Well, but it'll work. The iPhone is using Qi now, so it'll work with all the other chargers you have. This has wireless charging. Actually, this has wireless fast charging. They use dual voltages to speed up the charging on the Note 8.
Now, is it that they don't have a Qi chip in the AirPods? Is that why they don't charge the charger? Okay.
The AirPods, which also use, they only use cable charging. So what Apple said is they showed this mat, which they may or may not ship next year. There's some issues with it because some of the features of it are not yet part of the Qi spec.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed it with an iPhone on it, an Apple Watch on it. Yeah, they both use inductance charging. But the AirPods, And then they said, with the optional AirPod wireless charging case, you'll have to buy a new case for your AirPods for wireless charging. Do we like wireless? It's funny because there was a period where people were making wireless devices, and all my devices used wireless, and I bought a lot of wireless things. And then it felt like it was going out of fashion, like, oh, it's too inefficient. It's too hard to do it right. Let's go back to wired charging.
It is inefficient. I mean, it takes much longer to charge. And this is like 2 years ago when I last tried a Qi mat. So
it's gotten better.
It's gotten better.
And as I said, Samsung on this Note 8 has a fast charger, wireless charger.
Okay. Well, see, because when you, quick charge, the like half your phone in 15 minutes kind of charging.
The Qualcomm quick charge.
Yeah. So that's great. You wouldn't want to compete with that, you know? So,
well, if you could do it wirelessly, I mean, this is okay. So, one of the reasons I'm thrilled Apple is using Qi charging, because it's very un Apple-y, because you would expect they would use Apple charging that's incompatible with anything anybody else is doing, but they didn't, which makes Qi, which was already the de facto standard, PowerMat was starting to lose ground. It makes Qi the definite winner. And now you're going to see, I suspect, at airports, at bars, which is great because there is a real disadvantage to plugging in your phone or your device to some stranger's USB port. That is very risky.
Hasn't Starbucks had that for 3 years now?
And I don't recommend it.
I've never seen it. No.
Starbucks has the charging
You'll see them everywhere now because
I've never seen somebody use it.
Isn't that funny?
I've used it, but you had to. So the other thing is, you had to have a mat on your, or you had to have the capability on your phone.
What if it were built into the bar, and when you put your phone down on the bar, it's just getting a charge just because it's built
so
in.
So IKEA makes
then you use it as a coaster side table too, and think of all the uses.
We had go ahead, IKEA.
IKEA has side table that does this. It was either Hilton or Hyatt. In a couple of its hotels, had bought furniture that allowed this. I wrote about it when I was at Fortune. So, I mean,
a $59.99 nightstand with wireless charging.
Yeah. So it's slow because it's been hard. One, we had to get the standard. Then you had to get everybody to put it into their phones. And everybody's like, we'll do something when Apple does it, which makes sense.
It's done.
So now.
Yeah. I had somebody in. Have we aired that triangulation yet, Karsten? It's coming up. Probably while I'm on vacation, right? I interviewed a guy who is working, who has founded a company for wireless charging based on gallium nitride technology. You remember for a while, everybody was all excited about gallium arsenide was going to change chip manufacturer. It turned out not to be very easy. But gallium nitride is, you still use a silicon semiconductor. That's a well-known, robust technology to make silicon wafers. But then you apply a thin layer of gallium nitride on top of it, and what it makes it almost a superconductor. It makes it it's eventually going to change the way we design microprocessors. But for now, it's being used for field effect transformers, for amplification, and it can be used for wireless charging. And we had it a table that you put anything on anywhere on that table, it will charge. I mean, a big one. Ooh.
Who is this guy? What was the company name?
What was the name of it? It was something power. We're gonna have to look it up. Why, do you know him?
Okay, I have had people pitch me the gallium nitride story.
He brought a ton of stuff in.
I know.
He brought a ton of stuff in. It was working.
I know.
Efficient power conversion. You think it's bogus?
I don't know. I think the science is there. I think the challenge with any semiconductor process technology, which is what this is you have to get buy-in from the foundries. You have to get buy-in from the manufacturers.
Okay, so I agree. And this is what he's answered that.
He says it's CMOS.
It says the foundry is unchanged. We can actually add a little shed off the side of the fab. The fab is still doing silicon. Everything the same. That's the beauty of this. You don't have to get a new substrate. You're still using silicon. And then we just take the wafers and we spray them with gallium nitride. And then we put it in through the rest. I mean, he's building stuff now. So I really think this is. But the point being, you're going to see, he had a drone we were charging at distance. So the drone would hover over a charger and it would charge, which was pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So this is...
Could you stick your hand in the middle of it
yeah.
and have it
yeah.
not get warm?
He said the reason... He said it's not recommended. The reason that these wireless Qi chargers are fine is because it's not just blasting power like that. It's like a little Taurus or something. You know what?
Well, it's inductive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's inductive. So it's not okay, so it's not doing anything to it. You, right? Anyway, I'm excited. I don't know why wireless kind of went through this dip, this down cycle. The new Google, the Pixel doesn't have wireless in it. Apple's never had wireless until now. But I hope it does come back because it's really convenient when you get in bed just to put your phone down. I have a little easel I put it in. It just sits on there and it's just really convenient. And I don't care if it's going to take a little longer because it's going to be there all night.
Right. Well, and that's the... And if you have enough devices that have support for that, it's amazing because you can just be like, doot, 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 and just leave them there.
Exactly.
So are you arguing that if you didn't need to plug in the phone for charging, and you don't have a headphone jack, you have to plug it in for anything?
Well, I'm sure Apple would love to get rid of everything. And you're right. If they didn't have to charge, the Lightning port would be gone. By the way,
why not USB-C, damn it?
Yeah, well, because that's Apple.
I know.
They have so fragmented... Okay, I'm not going to get on a high horse here. But they have so fragmented their line now that it's very confusing. They use USB-C on their computers. They use Lightning on iOS. They have fingerprint readers on some of their phones, but not all of their phones. They have headphone jacks on some of their phones, but not all of their phones. It's just the user interface when you don't have a fingerprint reader... changes because you don't have a home button either. So they literally make now their newest high-end phones, the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, have different user interfaces. On one, you press a home button. On another, you have to slide in different up, down, left. It really is fragmented, and this is not good for users. It is not a good way of doing business, and it surprises me because Apple was famous for being the company that said, no, we're going to do this, this, and this, and that's it. I fear for them in the long run. I mean, obviously, they're going to make plenty of money, but I fear for their eternal souls in the long run because I think they've already lost. They lost me on laptops. They have screwed up their laptop line. They've pretty much screwed up their desktop line. The iMac is still a very nice desktop, but the rest of them are not. And they're about to really, I think, screw the pooch on phones, which is stunning. Mm. Well, what are consumers... Look, if you're going to buy an iPhone, which one do you buy? The 8 or the 10?
The 8.
Because of the price?
Good God, man. That is a freaking expensive phone.
Well, yes. So is the 8. I hate to tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not buying either of them. But and Face ID feels kind of gimmicky. And I think a lot of people net out at the 8 for normals. And then there'll be some people... who live in Silicon Valley, who will go the other way.
I have learned not to bet against Apple. You just watch. The iPhone 10 will be the fastest selling iPhone ever, if they can make them. The real problem is I don't think they can make them very fast. They've got problems with manufacture now.
Maybe hence the great pricing. No one will buy this phone for $1,000 or $1,200.
But why is $1,000 such a bad thing? I mean...
$800 was a bad thing. Yeah. I feel like $600.
This
computing
this Note 8
should
is
be going 900, down.
930 to 960. Actually, I didn't want to buy it at that price, but I got a trade in because I had the Note 7, and so I got it for $400 bucks plus. I had to trade in my old phone, but I didn't mind that. I like this phone.
You only have a certain amount of budget, or normal people who do not have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Or who have a normal amount of money, they have to make trade-offs. And if you're looking for,
here's the good news. There are ample, excellent $200 to $400 Android phones. And now you can get an iPhone SE for $349. $350. So the lowest price brand new iPhone is $350. So the good news is, all of this technology has trickled down, and there are very, very good inexpensive phones. The Motorola G5 is an excellent phone.
And what do you really miss if you buy one of those phones versus buying one of the top ones?
Screen and camera.
Yeah, that's it. And you know what? The screen tells me everything I need to know.
It still works.
The camera.
Same apps.
Yeah, still absolutely works. Absolutely works. And the camera, yeah, a better camera is always nice, but is it worth $500?
I think there are a lot
of people. I can go buy a heck of a camera for $500.
I think a lot of people feel like a decent camera is fine. It's just really a casual camera anyway.
Exactly.
Although, as like things like this portrait mode, I got to say, like,
that's pretty
cool. Now I cannot take bad pictures with an iPhone. And so now when I take my normal bad pictures, which I do all the time, people are going to be like, really, Stacey? Are you living in a hole? Do you not know that this exists? And now people are going to, it's just up in the game in a way that I just don't want to deal with.
Well, I guess that's kind of what I'm thinking is that at some point consumers are going to kind of bridle at Apple. Maybe not. There's no history of that, but.
Well, darn it, you're giving me such a nice feature that I should be expected to use because otherwise my photos look like crap. I mean, really, that's me being kind of lazy and I will still do it. People.
But you won't pay $1,000.
No, I will not. It's kind of like when manicures became, everyone has them, right? I still don't have a manicure because I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to pay for that. But now I look at, when I go places, I'm like, oh. I am like one of the few people
pay for
here.
A $1,500 oven.
Well, okay, because I have to eat.
It's priorities, Jeff. Priorities.
Because food is life,
we'll,
Jeff.
We'll pay for a lamp you can talk to, but let's not quibble here, Stacey.
Fair enough.
I actually,
my gadget spending goes elsewhere.
I actually do find that that's true, that people who say, oh, I'd never pay $1,000 for an iPhone, will gladly pay $1,000 for something else. That's just what it's whatever your price
is. It's the device I use more than any other device in life.
Right.
So I'm okay with buying a Pixel.
$45 a month.
Well, I don't pay that way.
No, but seriously, think of it. If you amortize it over the life of the phone, let's say it's a couple of years, $45 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's less than it's like $1.25 a day.
And actually, if you look at the cost per usage minute of that phone, Stacey, versus that oven.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. How much toast can one person make?
Cost per usage minute makes the phone look really
cool. By the way, I tried your recipe. I did the cauliflower in the June. It was a little soggy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Say he did it wrong because the oven did it for him.
I would have cooked it longer till because I maybe it's just me. I like my roasted cauliflower to be a little
mine gets kind of burnt.
See, I want it burnt. I like the caramelized.
Dry when you put it in there?
Well,
it's important to dry your stuff.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe that's what went wrong. I had just washed it. So maybe it was.
Yeah, don't put damp veggies because that steams it. And cauliflower's. Yeah, cauliflower's real sensitive to that too.
Damn it. The oven should have known better.
We'll ask them to stick an extra sensor in there.
Just say,
wait, is this steaming?
Did you dry it yet?
Stop.
Did you dry it yet? Of course, that's right. That's exactly right.
No, they need a little blow dryer setting.
Well, it is convection. They could do that.
Yeah.
Blow out the steam.
There. Okay, wait. Okay, not on the June, but let's go back for a second because I think it was a Fast Company article, maybe it was VentureBeat, that asked if they were like, the iPhone 10 doesn't come up with a new metaphor for computing, and they were sad about that. Did you see this article by any chance?
That's quite a burden.
Isn't it a burden?
Slab of glass that has to fit in your pocket. Where's the new metaphor for computing?
They were like 10 years, that's what we need. But I will say, I think they kind of showed it. And what I think, and I did a little of this on the podcast, and I've been thinking about it a little bit more, is with the AirPods and the watch, today that watch is not great because it doesn't have a lot of talk time, et cetera. They freed us up from carrying our phone everywhere. You're still going to bring it to work or something like that. But when you walk the dog or maybe you're just running out, you know, to the corner store or you just don't want to pull out your phone, you're going to start leaving it in your bag more. The same way I remember back in like 2008, I think it was, at South by Southwest, I suddenly noticed we shifted from everyone being on their laptops at the event to everyone just charging their phones. So you'd see people instead of sitting on the floor charging their laptops and doing their stuff, they were sitting on the floor doing everything with their phone. And I think if you think about metaphors for computing, that, unless you're in content creation, because that's why we all still have laptops, that's a really interesting possibility. We'll go there. It needs to improve, but I think that's kind of where we might be heading. That's it.
If you don't call this the new metaphor for computing, I don't know what is. Animojis, my friends. All right. You know who's going to do that? If you really want somebody reinventing computing, Samsung has said, and I hope that this is, they're not just blowing smoke. Samsung has said that the next year's note will have a foldable screen.
Oh, yeah. I saw this.
That would be a new metaphor, wouldn't it?
Okay, no, that's just having a foldable screen.
Now, then if it can fold back on itself.
It can. So imagine something the same size as the phone that you could put in your pocket, but that when you needed a larger screen, you'd open it up, and it would be maybe seven, like a tablet. What about that, huh? Now how much would you pay?
I mean, that's still just a screen.
Well, but well, you're right. I mean, I guess if you make the screen a Windows desktop, it's not a new metaphor for computing.
That's actually not a new metaphor, but it's cool. I'm not lying that it's not cool.
I think that's a pretty big, I mean, if you came
what
from
are you
another
gonna
planet,
do with it?
If you came from another planet and you saw us arguing, is this better or is this or that better? You'd say, well, but they're all rectangular glass slabs. What do you mean? They're all this. What's the difference? It's like how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? It's a completely silly academic argument. These things are so similar. I mean,
so,
that they're
but
not,
think about a new
a
way to, there's a new way to interact. So the phones represented both the new way to interact with computing and new opportunities for computing because they had always on GPS that you could track, right?
And voice has changed things, right? The ability to talk to them.
Voice is doing a similar thing, and voice is part of this, like the upcoming metaphor for computing with computing embedded throughout your,
right?
Not embedded in your body,
maybe,
but
you won't even
around
need a screen.
Well, that is my thought. Your screen is going to become the same way that I have to pull out my laptop if I want to write a blog post. Your screen will become something that you pull out only when you need that functionality, and you'll need it. Still quite a bit, but it's going to be less and less. And you could do everything soon from, not everything, most things from ear pods and a computer that sits on your wrist. And maybe it also talks back to your phone pulls from your phone for extra compute power. I don't know.
Next generation.
Well, the last thing that changed the metaphor of computing was the iPhone 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The last attempt at it was Google Glass.
But Google Glass, it was just before its time. Because imagine a pair of spectacles that look roughly like your actual glasses with AirPod-style audio and speech in the temples, camera, heads-up display, augmented reality heads-up display.
Something that's before its time has not successfully changed computing.
Right.
The
Nokia talked about phones.
Look at the Newton. The Newton was a flop, but predicted everything that has happened since.
Yeah, but I mean, Nokia had smartphones, and I remember vividly sitting with, executives at Qualcomm about, like, tablets, right? We discussed the iPad before the iPad was even a thing.
There's a long tradition, in fact,
Osborne 1 changed the metaphor.
Remember
of computing.
The slate?
It wasn't
remember
a success.
The Go computer,
yeah,
the
right.
Pen computer.
I buy it.
There's a long tradition of very clunky, poorly implemented attempts to do what only later technology would make possible. And I think that the Google Glass actually is going to be. We'll look back on it much like we look on Newton or the slate and say
with a laugh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good try, but the time wasn't ready yet. Microsoft's HoloLens is still not ready. It's.
Mm-hmm. All right. QCAT.
QCAT. It was a sign of the times.
I have it.
I do too.
Oh, Jeff.
The single worst business presentation I ever went to.
Oh. So I think, you like a smaller phone, Stacey, right? So you're not going to get the Pixel 2 XL. You'll get the Pixel 2, the little
one. Yeah, I'll get the smaller of my options.
Yeah. October 5th is supposedly the date. We'll find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Google has not said. I think that will be the end of it, and you can at that point make a reasonable choice between the options. I think the LG V30 is going to be another one to look very closely at.
All right,
especially if Google doesn't have a headphone jack. Let me see if the LG does.
Oh, you know, this is my phone that died. I have the Nexus 5X that LG screwed up so badly.
Yeah.
This was actually my replacement that just died, like, literally in my bag one day. I pulled it out and it was like, boop, done. And I'm too lazy to actually get to do it back for a month since I have a spare phone. So that's me.
I would also look at the V30. I'm trying to find out, though. Yeah, it has a headphone jack. See, that's going to be the effect for people who need a headphone jack, the Pixel 2.
I'll go back to this. With the charge, you really could, Apple could eliminate all orifices.
I feel that they will. I feel that.
Can we not call them orifices on the phone? I'm just going to put that request
out. It's just
out
a
here.
Fancy word for hole.
Yeah, why don't we just call it what it is?
Ports. We can call them ports.
Worse, actually.
Ports.
I think hole sounds worse.
I agree. Ports.
Okay.
Ports.
Ports. So if you care about learning about 3D printed self-folding electronics,
yes,
which
I
is
do.
What we're just talking about, I received today an article from the Applied Materials and Interfaces publication.
You get such great magazines at home. That is such a good magazine.
It is. I don't think it's. Yeah. I can send you here. I'll drop a link in for you.
Stacey, your new Applied Materials magazine has arrived.
Ooh, I can't wait. Quick, give me that.
If you don't know how things work, how can you talk about it? It's like intelligent. I know. Here, I'll stick it under Stacey's thing. I know nobody's going to read it, but by golly.
By golly, I'm going to.
We don't have to read it because you did. So tell us what's in it.
I haven't read it yet.
Oh.
When we were talking about this is, I literally got it today. It's in one of my tabs.
All right. I'm loading it up. 3D
printed. It is pretty complicated looking.
Self-folding. Well, you didn't mention self-folding.
This is really cool stuff. Sorry.
Composites that self-fold have so far relied on using the stimuli-responsive mechanisms, focusing on reversible shape change. Integrating additional functions within these composites can... Oh, so they're going to have different shapes depending on their function.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, so this is cool stuff, right?
Upon peeling from the print platform, the composite self-shapes itself using the residual forces resulting from polymer swelling during the layer-by-layer fabrication process. As a specific example, electrochromic elements are printed within the composite and can be electrically controlled through its folded legs. Our shape transformation scheme provides a route to transform planar electronics into non-planar geometries containing the overhangs. My God, how did they ever think of that?
This is an academic paper, guys. Let's all...
No, it's printed flat, and then when it's removed from the surface, it goes... And assumes a shape.
Isn't that cool?
Wow. Yeah.
Did you ever read Ken Liu's Paper Menagerie short story? Where in his, he folds origami shapes and they get up and walk around. You could create those. And that would be neat.
I can't wait.
All right. Sorry. The future is cool. We'll move back to the present because there's Google stuff.
I would like to live in the future. I'm just saying.
There's lots of Google stuff.
All right. Let's take a break. We want
a future without bodegas. We'll get to that.
I love that. I want to talk about that.
That story is amazing.
And more. In just a minute, Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT, the IoTpodcast.com, at Giga Stacey on the Twitter, because she was with Giga Ohm for so long. She's still got the Giga in her.
Oh, I do have a mouse thing over my door.
Yeah, that's ours. We put that there for you. It's a new hook hanging on the door.
it's not chrome like all the other.
It looks
hardware.
So realistic. Oh, it moved! Oh my God! Now it's on you. Get it off of me! Get it off of me! Also with us, Jeff Jarvis. He's at BuzzMachine.com.
I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah,
I don't
put a mouse on him. Yeah, that's all right. We are brought to you today by Rocket Mortgage. Put a mouse on your mortgage. Quicken Loans, one of the best lenders in the country, realized that the mortgage process really wasn't keeping up with the times. It was directly out of the 20th, maybe the 19th century. You had to go to a bank, beg in hat in hand, and say, please, sir, can I have some money to buy this house? Or can I refinance my house and take some money out of it? And then he would go and look through a bunch of foolscap paper, thin paper, and search for the best rate. And maybe, you know, he'd then say, all right, well, here's what we'll need from you, and give you a laundry list of documents you have to find or beg, steal, or borrow from your bank and other financial. This is all history. History. Thanks to Quicken Loans, they've invented Rocket Mortgage. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. You do it directly from your phone or your computer or your tablet, and it's fast. You don't have to go find papers because they are, you know, paired up with all the financial institutions. So all you have to do is share your financial information by touching a button, and then they crunch the numbers, and based on your income, assets, and credits, they will come up with a home loan option or two or three for which you qualify. You pick the one that's right for you. And all of this, thanks to computers, took minutes. You didn't even have to get up from the chair, or you didn't have to leave the open house where you're going to make that offer, because you could show the realtor your phone that says, you're approved. That's Rocket Mortgage for you. Fast, easy, transparent. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently at rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. We thank him so much for supporting This Week in Google. Couldn't do it without our fine sponsors. Well, we could. We just have to charge you. Which would you prefer?
Keep this business model alive.
It's, you know, it's, I think we've talked about this before. It's, but I think you said something, and I really liked this. It's fundamentally democratic to have ad-supported media, because it's free.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is give it your attention, but, you know, that you got to give up something.
Yep.
There's blood in the water in Silicon Valley. I thought this was a very interesting think piece.
Excellent
on BuzzFeed.
Piece, I thought.
Ben Smith, its editor-in-chief, pointed out that it is, I for a little bit thought it might be a golden age for Silicon Valley and mega corporations, because of, there'll be no antitrust prosecutions under the Trump administration. Or will they? Well, perhaps they will. Steve Bannon and Bernie Sanders both want big tech treated, as in Bannon's words in Hong Kong this week, public utilities. Tucker Carlson and Franklin Foer have found common ground. Even the group No Labels, I'm reading from his column, an exquisitely poll-tested effort to create a safe news center, is on board. Rupert Murdoch, never shy to use his media power to advance his commercial interests, is hard at work. Antitrust is back, baby. It started with Yelp complaining that despite a 2012 consent decree, Google continues to scrape photos from the Yelp site and put them in its business listings. They want an antitrust case against Google, and they've gone to the FTC to ask for it.
I think it started long before this.
Oh yeah.
If you look at things like Europe and GDPR, that is.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That is
absolutely.
Yeah. So I feel like
Ben says this leads to a kind of murder on the Orient Express alliance against big tech. Everyone wants to kill them.
Yeah, and I think it's totally, you know, add in Europe. And I've been trying to write this, and it's impossible to write without sounding horribly haughty, but we talked about it last week on the show a little bit. But what the hell, it never stops me. I don't sound haughty.
You've always been a haughty. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But with so much in their control, with so much power, with the future of the internet control, they've got to go head over heels to be decent. And it wasn't sufficient to say, don't be evil. The motto should have been, do good.
I actually think Facebook is, Google actually tries. You know, Facebook, on the other hand, has been pretty shruggy about it all. So I think Google, with don't be evil, very sincerely for a long time, really was trying not to be evil, because they were aware of what kind of future they could build with access to all of the world's information, which used to be, is it still their thing?
Oh, yeah, and make it accessible. And always for the record, the News Integrity Initiative, which I started, got a lot of money from Facebook. But I'm independent from Facebook. Caveat done. I think that Zuckerberg, when I interviewed Zuckerberg years ago now, he honestly, earnestly believes that a connected world is a better world, and getting more people to connect with each other and create communities and work in communities is a better world. So I think Facebook has a mission too. How well they each do with their missions is a different question.
I think now Zuckerberg is doing the soul searching necessary. I don't think Zuckerberg was malicious in... Well, actually, he kind of was a dick if you think about why he created Facebook in the first place.
None of these things are assuming that this is because of the malfeasance of these corporate titans. It's just that public opinion is turning against them.
Well, I think people are becoming more aware of how much information these people have,
yes,
how much influence there is,
yes,
and they're also feeling alienated in ways that are probably very confusing. So when you think about how people are rewarded in the faces they show on these sites and how not true they are and how intrusive it becomes to maintain that facade, I think people are becoming a little bit more aware of the, and it's not harms, it's just of the permeation of this stuff into
But I also think, Stacey, what Ben Smith's article does is it makes clear that there are also a lot of enemies with agendas, mm-hmm, who are ganging up, and those enemies include media, who think that Google and Facebook stole what God gave them in revenue, Yelp, which is a competitor, Murdoch, politicians.
That's how this always goes, though. Mm-hmm. To take down, if you want to regulate or put some sort of governance on what Facebook and Google are doing or the other big tech companies, and I actually don't think that's a bad thing, you're going to need this kind of Murder on the Orient Express group. And does media have an agenda? Oh, yes, they do. But
I think
Google and Facebook
have. That's where we split.
That's just how politics works, though.
Of all governments regulating those companies, thus the internet, I dread that.
I dread all government regulation, because we have to dig through so much crap to get to the real issues and things that might actually help individual people. And I'm always going to be for the individual consumers in every fight. But
well, let me ask you this: that's an interesting starting point. There's no, the power of capitalism is that when somebody becomes wealthy, makes money, they reinvest it. They make money out of innovation. It's not a zero-sum game. They don't become, and I think you could say this is the case with Google, Facebook, Amazon, maybe not Amazon so much, but certainly Google and Facebook, they added value, and that's where all that money came from and all that power came from, was adding value. It wasn't they took it from somebody else. So everybody acknowledges that these are valuable entities. They provide value in our life. But there's also seems to be a growing awareness that they have become so big that they have too much power now. It's different for each one, but let's use Facebook as an example. Margaret Sullivan in the Washington Post, this is again from Ben Smith's column, wrote, "Would Donald Trump be president today if Facebook didn't exist? Although there is a long list of reasons for his win, there's increasing reason to believe the answer is no." And the more we learn about, the Russians very effectively using Facebook and so forth.
Bit specious. That's a bit of a specious argument.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it is would
and
X
then, but that's
exist
from the
without,
left
without radio? Would X exist without TV?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Would X exist without whatever?
But radio and TV are an industry. Facebook is a company.
Well, we used to have fair. Is it the fairness doctrine?
Yeah.
When we were talking about political parties, I mean, TV and radio back in the day, you had to publish. Is it the fairness doctrine, Jeff? It's been a long time since my media law classes.
Yes, it's the fairness doctrine. But I have to say, there's a difference between saying I don't want to shut down radio and TV because that's shutting down an industry, and saying there's a company that wields too much power.
Well, the president's not on Facebook. The president's on Twitter. Let's remember, it's not just
Having this debate about Sinclair with its pro-Trump agenda in letting the FCC yep. approve and its... So
lest we sound too left-wing, on the other side, many conservatives say that these companies, Facebook and Google, are fostering a progressive agenda that they don't like. So that's the point, is it's coming from both sides now. There's a general building consensus that these companies are too big and
there's
too powerful.
Also a general... I'm sorry, I interrupted. There's a general... The institutions that are challenged by these new companies and by this new reality of the internet are fighting back because they're challenged, because they're disrupted.
Right. I understand that. You're talking about newspapers, yeah. for example. I understand that.
Yeah.
But that's not the only place this is coming from. It doesn't become a problem if it's just newspapers or if it's just the left wing or if it's just the right wing. But when you get these unholy coalitions between all these groups, if I were Google or Facebook or Amazon, I'd be threatened.
They should absolutely. And so I want to go back to something we said last week because it was on the show last week that the story of the $100,000 Russian political ads on Facebook broke.
Right.
And we were talking about it. And my first thought was, it was wrong. Whatever it was. In first blush, I wondered whether Facebook could have known they were Russian. And that's key. If they were ads, they were ads. There's another talk about saying that Facebook should be under the same regulations, Stacey, as television and should be transparent about this. This to me becomes pretty easy now, and Facebook's not doing this. Facebook should disclose the ads and the targeting that was used for them. It should expose how the manipulation occurs. The public deserves to know this.
Well, wait, though. So tied to that, though, we have a story about it's not the sponsored tag, the controversial tag not actually helping on Facebook. And I'm wondering if what you're proposing would have the same lack of effectiveness.
Well,
I think it's a good idea.
No, right. Okay. So let me answer that first. It's the disputed tag, which is
disputed,
the fact-checking thing. And here again, I'm going to criticize Facebook. That was one study with interviews outside of Facebook saying that the fact checker dispute only affects a certain amount of attitude towards something that's disputed, and if it's ideological one way or the other, it could actually make the spreading of it worse. The problem here too is that Facebook is not being transparent about this, and journalists are asking Facebook, because journalists are helping with the fact checking, would you please give us the data on this? That's complicated to this extent. When the disputed tag comes up on Facebook, Facebook itself reacts to that, right? I think that they don't promote stuff that's been disputed now because they don't want to be accused of pushing what is seen clearly as fake. So you can't separate the user behavior, the impact on the user behavior, from the impact on Facebook's algorithm. Nonetheless, in both these cases, Facebook should be open. So the difference between that, Stacey, and the political ads is that's not about trying to expose the political ad to the user. It's about exposing this set of political ads and their targeting criteria to researchers and media so we can understand what did the Ruskies do and how did they do it? Who did they go after with what? And what impact did they have? So that's more for researchers than it is for the end user. But both cases are about being transparent. And you're right, Leo. If this kind of stuff's going to go around, it would only be wise of them to say, let's go over head over heels to be transparent, to be open, to get the help of researchers to figure out what's going on here and do something about it.
Now, how does this tie into the bodega?
The bodega story is it's about, and by the way, our friend Siva Varianathan has the great hashtag on this one, the brodega.
That's exactly what it is.
Silicon Valley attitude. You want to explain the story first?
Yeah. So a couple of former Googlers have created a very interesting product. It's a locked box, display box that goes in your apartment or, you know, other public place, maybe your business. You unlock it with your phone and take what you want.
Stacey would have this at her home, but no one else would.
There's no human here. It's just like that Amazon store that knows who you are and knows with cameras and sensors what you've purchased and charges your phone automatically, and you walk away and the thing locks itself back up. It is a corner store without any employees, and this is a startup, and they call it Bodega because it will replace all the little bodegas in New York City. I don't know if it will or won't, but it's certainly not going to have the range of products.
And so this set off a firestorm of people saying of bodega jokes. There's a Josh Marsh tweet. I actually appreciate the douchebags who rolled out the let's end bodegas idea. The burgeoning tech backlash needed this moment of douchebaggery.
Well, wait a minute, though. Should an entrepreneur worry about that kind of thing? I mean,
yeah, I think so, because it shows the haughtiness, the separation from reality of real life of Silicon Valley employees. Now, wait a minute.
What if it's a better way to serve people?
And be sensitive about how you do it. Find a way that makes
sense.
Should
Uber not attempt to replace cab drivers because of the poor cab drivers?
They should figure out what the impact is and have something, some kind of...
I disagree entirely.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I think these guys were tone deaf in naming their company Bodega?
They probably shouldn't have named it Bodega.
That's the key.
They could have just called it the Stuff Box or something.
They could have called it Vending 2.0.
Yeah.
And nobody would have complained.
Yeah, it's just a vending machine.
So then they wrote a post trying to walk back as fast as they could. But all it does is it showed the attitude in Silicon Valley, and it showed the cluelessness as to the current atmosphere, which Ben Smith wrote about.
By the way, they maybe even took it a step further, because I guess there's a meme called Bodega Cats about cats that sleep in bodegas. And they took the bodega cat as their logo, which probably added insult to injury.
hold on, guys, because I think there's some blame to be had here, too. The media, flipped out on this one. And the Fast Company article is the one. Didn't the Fast Company article actually suggest that this was going to, in the headline, replace bodegas?
Yeah, it says it will make them obsolete. That's not necessarily what these guys were planning, right?
So let's talk about that. One,
yes,
you know, right. a lot of this outrage was from this headline, which totally fine. You know, these guys in their walk back, they're like, oh, we talked to some people in New York and we had branding firms. And I'm like, yeah, but did you talk to the right people? Probably not. And I get it. And totally tone deaf. But this is like a tempest in a freaking teapot, you guys. This startup may not even be around in 6 months. It's not that freaking innovative. Let's joust at something real.
Stacey, I like your point about media, and I just put up something on the rundown at the bottom of the other, which I think demonstrates your point excellently, how fake news is created. Parker Malloy put up a Twitter thread that Jennifer Lawrence allegedly said that hurricanes are punishment for electing Trump. And this spreads around. You see the Daily Wire, you see it on Alex Jones, you see it everywhere. You see CNN write about it. If you go to the next tweet, Leo, she didn't say that at all. Not at all. But it takes on a life of its own. Media get used. They go for the clicks. They're the chumps. The bad guys put this into the agenda. And now poor Jennifer Lawrence is acting like there's a war over this when there's not.
It does not pay to be in the public eye anymore. Jeez Louise. You just if anybody is considering at this point being famous, don't. Just don't.
It's not cracked. Well,
it's not going to get better either.
And what people remember is still a lot of times the fake news. I mean, look at everybody and poor Al Gore in inventing the internet.
I mean,
so it's not new. It spreads faster. You can do it easier. You can make up just about anything. And
the bodega guys have apologized. Yes.
Yeah, they're idiots, but God, y'all,
I don't even know that they're idiots. I think that sounds like a pretty good idea.
It's not that new. Facebook has had this
in their
offices
forever. Called the vending machine.
I feel like in Japan, you could probably walk up to and I'm sure there's some supply chain management and optimization, and they can grab Zarly-esque algorithms.
Who went throwing eggs at the Google bus? People in gentrified neighborhoods in San Francisco where bodegas were going away, getting replaced by Starbucks. It doesn't take a genius to say, we're going to have a public relationship here. What should that relationship look like? What should we be sensitive to? In an age when jobs are going to be eliminated, when we know most retail jobs are going to be eliminated, we're going to come out with this. How should we position this? What should we call it? let's call it little Spanish guy down at the corner who's going to be jobless and poor soon and deported by the president. And we don't care because we're Googlers. It's just dumb. That's all. Just dumb.
Well, and it really all it was is just a total lack of awareness of the outside world. And everybody's mad at Silicon Valley for that anyway.
Exactly. That's my only point. That is my only point.
All right.
All right. I just, it's such this, the media,
this, what, Leo?
It's so
Leo
depressing.
Needs a vacation.
I do. I need a vacation.
Yeah,
the landscape, the media landscape is so broken, and people are, this is, none of this makes any sense or anything. It's just, in Jennifer Lawrence and Bodegas, there's a very similar thread here. Yeah, it's just a bunch of, and it's, I blame Twitter, but it's not just Twitter. Although Twitter is definitely helping, but
this is my point about the Franklin Four piece. Did you see that one?
No, what's that?
So
piece?
Franklin Four wrote an absolute screed against technology, and it was excerpted in the Washington Post. And then I did, as we used to call it, a fisking in blog days. It's on the rundown where it was amazing because it said technology is going to take away our individuality, and I thought, how unself-aware can you be? Mass media never gave us individuality. It never let us.
He's got a book called World Without Mind.
That kind of crap, right?
I think it let us ignore, it let us create our own individuality without having things shoved in our face all the time.
I just want to say we did it to ourselves. We did it to ourselves. This is not, there's no blame here. This is the environment we've created. We did it to
ourselves. That's a Radiohead song.
Oh,
you did
well.
It to yourself.
Thank you. Radiohead
you
knew.
You and no one else. I can't sing. I'm sorry.
It's easy to blame Twitter or Google Reddit or 4chan, but really this is the world we've all created. I mean, I blame 24-hour news channels.
Absolutely.
I blame Sean Hannity.
I blame the business model of mass media.
Irma. I blame it's all. I just makes me want to move to the wilderness with her and live.
Leo, you would not last 20 seconds in the wilderness.
But I have a note 8. I could probably figure it out.
So I'm going to give you the note 8. It's too big. You cannot carry it in your pocket like that. It disrupts the line of your suit. It pops up like an ugly handkerchief.
What if I put it here? That's just because I'm lazy. See, now it's in my breast pocket on my.
Now your jacket.
I'd have. Yeah, your jacket's going to be.
I was going to hang it around my neck. How about that with a little pendant?
No.
Who was it? One of the anchors down in
Florida. You need a suspender holder.
They put a baggie. They had their phone in a baggie. I think it was Leonard Holt. Lester Holt.
Lester Holt.
I think he had his phone in a baggie.
Why?
Which was better than the MSNBC reporter who tied himself to a building.
I saw that picture you tweeted. So that he wouldn't get washed away in Irma. Every time I saw somebody doing a stand-up in the storm, I thought of you, Jeff. Every single
screaming.
But, you know, I think...
Think of the ratings if he got washed away.
Well, but I think the...
Business model, it all goes back to the business model. Exactly, Stacey.
Anderson Cooper explained it, though. Anderson Cooper's standing there. He's soggy. He's wet. He explained it. He said, we go out here so you can see what it's like so you don't have to go out here and risk your necks.
The trees will tell the story. It's windy. It's very
No, but it's better if a person's standing there almost, and he's tethered, and he's almost dead.
It's crap. Self-justification for ratings.
Although I will say,
Jennifer
I watched someone's
Rodegas, and...
It's all ratings.
Yes, it's all ratings.
We
all
have created a perfect feedback loop where we tell them what we want, and they give us what we want, and then we want more of it, and they give us... We are rats in a Skinner box hitting the pellet button over and over again. We did it to ourselves. They did it to us. It's this feedback loop. This is it. That's all there is. There's no Edward R. Murrow to say, well, we need a division where we don't make any money.
Edward R. Murrow, by the way, was the first guy to go stand in the... Seriously, was the first guy to go stand
in
the
London.
Storm.
This is London. Yeah.
Well,
in a hurricane.
In a hurricane.
Yeah, well, that's because, here's the challenge, right? We can talk about business all models all we want and blame the business guys. But at the same time, as a journalist, I do want someone to read my story. If I'm actually going out and reporting on something really important, I may feel cheap to get I call them dead babies, but because dead babies sell newspapers and get people to read these stories that are otherwise really difficult and boring. But you have to go out and find those, as much as it may be awful, because otherwise people aren't going to read it and they're not going to know the information they need. Healthcare is a really good example of this. Storms warning and trying to convey
to people. Nobody's doing that. Nobody cares.
That's not true. There are people who do that.
Okay, but they're getting to be fewer and fewer because the people who are most successful are the ones who don't worry about putting any nutrition in your Wheaties. They just say, put more sugar in the Wheaties.
I think we just have more crap to wade through. I mean, there's always been a finite supply of really good investigative journalism. I mean, it's not like... That is very much a calling. That is very much so. And that still exists. It's so much easier to throw crap at things now. So we're doing that too. And it just buries the good stuff. I really do think that there's still plenty of really good reporting out there. I just think it's buried in utter shit.
Yeah, but what do we reward? We don't reward the really good.
Karsten, sorry.
We don't reward the really good reporting. We reward the cats and the
people do reward good reporting.
Do they?
People say that, yes, you're not going to get VC rewarded. I feel like I'm doing good reporting and I'm making money. It's a lifestyle for me. It is not going to make me rich, but I'm doing what I love and I'm explaining it. And there's an audience of people who, if I read this paper on foldable electronics and explain to them in plain English what this means and how it might change the world, they'll listen to it.
I agree. And that's all that Twit was always about. That it was trying to give people real information that would be of value to them, not trying to be the most successful enterprise out there. It's why we never took venture capital, because I didn't want anybody to tell me that we had to have more cleavage on the show or whatever. But it's no way to riches. And we don't. And as a result, Stacey, you probably would acknowledge, we don't reach the largest possible audience by any means.
But reach a higher value audience.
Well, that's the hope.
Yeah, it's high. It's somewhat higher value, but frankly, Goodyear's never going to advertise on Twit. I mean, you know, the big bucks are still going to NFL, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a depressive, cranky old man, but I think we are in a... And it's our biologies, by the way, that are determining this. I mean, it's clearly what our brains were designed to, you know, collect gossip.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, come on. It is. It's evolutionary biology.
We have parts. We all have those parts of us, right? I mean, I look at cat videos. Ted Cruz looks at porn. And we
what's
all
that story,
news?
By the way? Did he... What happened there? Because I keep seeing people refer to it.
Oh, Staffer accidentally liked it.
Well, Staffer, yeah.
So he said
Ted Cruz's official Twitter account liked a porn tweet.
Right.
I didn't know there was porn on Twitter. Okay?
Oh my God, there's so much porn on Twitter.
I did not know this was a thing. I felt
so
like
now
how I felt.
There's a character in the video who, while still dressed, it's supposed to be somebody shtupping somebody and she's related to somebody and she's watching. So the one who's not shtupping at the moment has this great shocked look thing. And that's turning into the greatest gif now. It's
so,
wonderful.
So Cruz's excuse was, "Oh, it wasn't me; it was my staffer."
Yeah, some poor staffer thrown into the porn bus.
It's really easy to, by accident, like a tweet. By the way, I do it all the time. You know, you accidentally, because I'm a lefty.
But you have to see it first, Leo. That's
a good point. You have to be following it, huh?
Yeah.
But you could search for, you know, incest videos and get that by accident.
Why would you be searching for incest videos?
Leo.
It happens.
look, Leo, there's me who literally had no idea there was porn on Twitter.
Well,
Stacey, there's a whole...
You're such a good girl,
Twitter.
Stacey.
There's lots of other Twitters.
There's so many Twitters. That's one of the most interesting things. My favorite Twitter is Black Twitter. It's fabulous.
Absolutely.
It's fabulous. It's the best Twitter of all. But... I think that is one of the most interesting things about Twitter, isn't it? The subculture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you want some good news, Leo?
Yeah, you better, because I'm getting depressed.
Google backs the Oxford comma. I call that great news.
Well, who doesn't?
Oh, I'm so mad.
Who doesn't back the Oxford comma? What?
Stacey, you don't?
No. Okay.
Now I'm shocked.
I feel that any writer is... You can tell when you need an Oxford comma. I know people are always giving the same.
That's true. You can tell when you need it. You can tell when
it's. And the rest of the time, it's just
superfluous. Shoots and leaves would be confusing.
No, you use it consistently. That's the point of grammar. So that you know the meaning.
No, I think, Stacey's a more modern. I understand what you're saying, Stacey. You're saying you don't have to follow the rules. You have to be clear. You have to be unambiguous. You have to. Right. That's all. That's your only obligation.
Stacey's ruining the language. That's what she's doing.
I am single-handedly. Yes. I literally.
The Oxford comma.
I would just point out, Stacey, that it is easier to always use it than to try to look at every sentence and say,
bingo.
Would this be confusing?
And so my editors will tell you that my comma abilities are terrible. I think one of them was like, I like how you go in after you've written something and clearly just sprinkle commas. Yeah.
I had a Latin teacher call that comma blunder. You're a comma blunderer.
I am. I sprinkle my commas. Yeah. I'm like, that feels like a natural place to take a breath.
It is actually a really interesting art to know when to and when not to use commas. And I would say, in general, use fewer, not more commas.
My weakness is I use too many semicolons.
So the Oxford comma, for people who are baffled and would like to be enlightened on the most important grammatical rule of all,
done it again.
Is when you have three or more things in a series, like one, two, and three. Let's make it easy. You put a comma after each item in the series, including the one before the and. One comma, two comma, and three. If you don't, it could look like one comma, two, and three. It could look like two items in the series instead of three. That's usually obvious that it's one, two, and three, not one, two, and three. But what Stacey's saying is when it isn't clear, you should put a comma in. What Jeff's saying is you should always put a comma in to avoid ambiguity.
Google, not recommended. I dedicate this book to my parents, comma, Ayn Rand and God. As opposed to I dedicate this book to my parents, comma, Ayn Rand, comma, and God.
Now, where did Google weigh in on this?
It's in the register there. They basically have a developer documentation guide. Now, there's something here relevant to Stacey. So internet is now lowercase, as it should be, because it is just part of society.
Use it in lowercase until Microsoft Word kept telling me it's uppercase.
I make it lowercase in all cases.
Yeah.
However, internet of things, the I and T are uppercase so that you can get the abbreviation IOT.
Mm-hmm. Who uses Google for their English style guides?
Developers. Well, so the AP style guide, didn't AP lowercase internet many, many moons ago? I mean,
Guardian was early. Guardian did it earlier.
And then there's email, one word, email with a dash between the E and the M. There's a lot of these things.
About who invented it.
And then there's who invented it, yes. I invented email in high school. Many people don't know that.
Now, I didn't know that the word jank.
As in janky?
As in blocking a software application's user interface due to slow operations or poor interface design. Google says it should be used with care. They say don't use learnings.
No, you know why? Because a lot of developers will use this kind of slangy descriptions instead of something more precise. That's all.
Yes. Login is a noun.
It doesn't work.
Sign in is the preferred verb. Login is not a verb.
Oh.
And whatever you do, don't use the word learnings.
And by the way, do not use Google as a verb.
You cannot Google something. You can search with Google, but you may not Google it.
How about do not capitalize? No, not. Oh, never mind. Oh, someone say. How do we pronounce cash? It's cash.
Now, is this for written or spoken word?
This is written. This is the developer documentation guide here.
Oh, okay.
Now, the other one I like is interface, similarly, is not a verb.
That's right. Damn straight.
That's true.
Preferred and partner verb is interact, not a verb. Talk, speak, or communicate.
Partner is a noun, not a verb.
All these people verbalizing.
Probably wouldn't happen except this guide from Google, except they probably see so many god-awful.
Oh, you can imagine.
It must be horrible looking at
this. So, this is the Google Developer Documentation Style Guide. It has goals and non-goals, if you go forward to it. It doesn't apply to all Google documentation. So I guess you can use the not Oxford, the Stacey comet, as I'll call it in the future, elsewhere.
By the way, this is an example of an article no normal person cares about in the least.
But we're talking about it as my
fault. It's written by a journalist whose stock in trade is whether to put a comma after the second item in a serial or not.
If you want to see Slack channel, if the Oxford comma was mentioned anywhere, only journalists. Actually, journalists and people who care about grammar, I've had arguments with non-journalists about this.
I'm a bit of a grammar Nazi.
Really dig into this. This is fun for developers. So I go to the anthropomorphism link on the developer documentation style guide. Not recommended, the PCC is a new device. Recommended, the PC detects a new device.
Oh, screw that. I think you could say C's. I don't have a problem with that. That's interesting that they'd take the source to do that.
Huh. That's kind of fun. Did you put a link in there? I want to see this.
It's in the Google open source blog, Making the Google Developers Documentation Style Guide Public. Use it for open source documentation projects. It's developers.google.com/style.
Nice.
Yeah. But I still would stick with the AP style guide.
Okay. I'm actually okay with that.
And they even quote George Orwell saying, break any of these rules sooner than say anything outright barbarous.
Here's one. There's a word list. Abort. Don't use. Instead, use words like stop, exit, cancel, or end.
That's political. That's not. That is, isn't it? That's political.
Access as a verb. Avoid when you can. In favor of friendlier words like see, edit, find, use, or view. I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, but access has a particular meaning in computer talk.
I don't care. It's not English.
Technical writing is a little bit different than writing prose, standard prose.
Well, that's what academics say, too, and they're wrong.
Yeah, it's true that disciplines often become jargonized, and that's not a good thing because it kind of limits their audience. So I'll agree with you on that. But if it's not in Strunk and White, I eschew it.
Now, why would it say don't use application?
Is that how you say it?
Eschew? That's how I say it.
Oh, I always thought it was eschew.
How do you say it, Carson? You went to Harvard. Well, you're both wrong. It's eschew. Just look it up in the dictionary.
Okay,
so I got it right here. How do look, I pronounce he just doesn't eschew. Want to show it.
That's pronounced
eschew.
Eschew. No, she's wrong. Look it.
Wait.
Eschew. No, here, play my audio. Okay.
Eschew. Eschew.
Right. Okay, Google, how do you pronounce eschew?
Don't ask her that.
Now make it pronounce cuneiform.
Yeah, okay, so we had this debate. So I'm listening to this book. Now, what do you think, Carson, on the cuneiform?
It's cuneiform.
Is it really? Because I've always said cuneiform.
There isn't an E in there.
Yeah, but it comes from the Latin word cuneus, meaning wedge. And look, in this dictionary, cuneiform, three syllables, cuneiform, all three are acceptable.
Cuneiform.
Oh, okay.
Cuneiform.
However, this comes up because I'm listening to a book where the guy, for a whole chapter, says cuneiform, and it's driving me nuts. But it's a Britishism. I think cuneiform is preferred in Britain. And it's certainly acceptable. Like aluminium. It's certainly acceptable. But it does come from the Latin cuneus, which via the French cuneiform. So, but I'm just saying,
this is interesting.
No,
so
it's
Google
not.
Goes for the singular they.
Oh, that is interesting.
That's very interesting. Given
that's
given
how people,
but that's
talk,
that
though.
Pronouns thing. No,
it's
this
the pronouns. You
see
don't
again,
use
this
the,
is political.
I know it's
my pronouns so are they, them, and
people
theirs.
Like to view that as political, but that's also just how people talk.
If you can't stand that, says Google, then use he or she or rewrite to avoid singular gendered pronouns.
So is English going to evolve? Because
yes,
we don't.
It's an evolving language.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, it's of course. It's
Let's
gonna
not
evolve,
be like the French.
Is it going to evolve to use them in place of he or she?
It's that great character in Billions.
Yeah, my pronouns are they, them, and their. But when we went to Google I/O, you were with me, weren't you? They had a sign at the registration. Yes. We care about your pronouns
and you have stickers
that you could put on your badge that whether you prefer to be a he or a she or a they. So I think that's fine. I don't, you know, I think it is unfortunate that the collective, you know, human noun is he.
I got in trouble with one of my former students because I used in my last book, I used the presumptive pronoun. I used female in all cases. And I had an example of a user doing something. I would then say she.
I kind of like that because I think it and shakes you up a little bit.
I can't even remember exactly why I was in trouble, which is worse.
But it's like a good fashion. You don't want to do something that draws the eye. And using she draws the eye, right?
Wrong. Wrong. Using she only draws the eye because we have lived forever.
Okay, with I grant you
the
that.
Assumption that anything worth doing is that. Male.
And it's her story, you know what? Not his story. I grant you that.
So.
But it does draw the eye.
It doesn't draw the eye. The point is, like, I use she all the time in my stuff,
ear.
And it no longer draws the eye.
Yeah, if
unless
you use it
you're
enough.
An old misogynistic person who doesn't want to look at the world from that perspective. I'm just saying.
I take that personally.
I feel very strongly about this. I think
no,
people
I'm
who...
I'm with you.
I'm like...
And it's more than just a choice of words. Okay. It really does precondition the mind. To
yes.
think that all men are all doctors are men, and all nurses are women, and all of that, and so I think it is important. But we have yet to come up with a felicitous solution, because I think they is also ugly
they
to
is
me.
Use.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll get used to it.
I rewrite sentences where possible where the plural fits. Or
that's a good way around it, right?
Yeah.
That's a good way around it.
I use he or she, but. I also will, if it's a case of I'm presuming a person, so I'm not using it as a non-specific. I have a person. I presume that person is a woman.
By the way.
Unless, one exception, important exception. When discussing trolls.
They're always he.
They are he.
Or just trolls.
Or trolls, right. No it's, pronouns. It's. They don't deserve a pronoun.
Here's another funny one. Smartphone, do not use.
Yeah.
Instead, use mobile phone
See,
or phone.
That's Eurocentric, and it bothers me.
It's also Apple.
Because we call them cell phones in the States, and they call them mobiles everywhere else.
Or handies in Germany.
Or handies, yeah. That's why I like this show, because we drift very far afield.
So has the audience drifted away.
They've drifted to sleep, but we're engaged.
One more. Okay. Voila. Don't use.
Don't use voila?
Don't use voila.
But it's so fun.
Voila.
Oh, yeah. Do they say anything about y'all?
I don't think so.
My phone probably, my applications probably, if they said y'all, I'd be like, don't even.
Wait till young Sheldon takes off. Everybody going to be talking like this. It's
you know, he doesn't
huge.
Have an accent.
Isn't that interesting? They all do.
It's because Southern accents are considered
hicks.
Idiotic.
Yep, they're hicks.
Leave only
I noticed
one
that Stacey. Too. I noticed that too, Stacey. I was wondering if you saw it because I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want to see your feelings be hurt.
Y'all. I don't have a Southern accent. I say y'all, but
y'all.
Unless I'm talking to someone with a Southern.
How about
accent.
Ain't?
I say it actually a lot.
I don't.
Only for first person.
Ain't is actually a venerable construction. Was used by Shakespeare.
I know. Still don't say it.
Google's Material Design Awards are out. We'll talk about that in just a moment. I only say that to remind you what the subject matter of the show is. And that we will.
That was an exciting tease, Leo. I can't wait for that.
Wow. Okay. I can do better.
From grammar.
I was
to Material
like,
Design
I can,
Awards.
I can
Boy,
do better.
Today.
Yeah, I can do better. Wait a minute.
Needs a vacation, people.
Let's talk about Blueborn. Something.
Blueborn and why everybody uses Android should quickly update.
Freak out.
Our show today brought to you by My Doorbell. I do not have to freak out when I hear my doorbell ring. I know. The Ring Video Doorbell replaces your regular doorbell, pairs to your internet, has a camera, HD camera on it, microphone, speaker, and motion sensors. When anybody walks by your door and you get to set the area that it's looking at, it lets you know on your phone, wherever you are. When somebody rings your doorbell, you hear a dong, dong, dong on your phone and you can answer it. You could say, I'm in the bath, please go away, or whatever. do not burglar my house today. I am here, I am armed, and I'm ready to shoot you. And that will work because bad guys don't want confrontations. They just go on to the other house, the house without the Ring video doorbell. Now Ring has expanded their line. They've got new doorbells and the new floodlight cam. It's a motion-activated camera and floodlight. Same thing. Got a camera, speaker, microphone, motion sensors. There's a few extra little things there. These floodlights go on when they detect motion. You could speak to the intruder in your yard, whether it be a raccoon or a burglar. And if it doesn't scare them off when you say, hey, what are you doing there? You can press a button and a 110 decibel alarm will flood their eardrums and they will tear off into the night. I love it. The Wall Street Journal's best of CES 2017, the Ring video doorbell, the Ring floodlight cams, the Ring stick-up cam. Go to right now, ring.com/twig. You can save up to $150 off a Ring of security kit. And if you already have a Ring, and I know most of you do, get one for family members, for friends, for parents. Help them protect themselves. Ring.com/twig. Up to $150 off a Ring of security kit. We thank Ring for their support of this week in Google.
They had a massive booth at Cedia.
I bet they did. They're big. And what's great is they're taking the money and they're creating new products, which I love. Jamie's really a smart guy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like their alarm system?
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, they're going to have an alarm system. He advertised on my show for Cedia and he talked about it. But nice. There's a lawsuit with ADT. They bought Zonoff a while back. And the reason why is because they're building an alarm system.
Oh, very.
Are they public?
How can ADT sue them?
Because, oh, God, it's so messy. You just don't even want to go there. So ADT, they're suing them because they hired everyone from a company that ADT invested in. And they're alleging, I don't remember all stealing the allegations.
Stuff. Yeah, I get it.
Stealing stuff. Let's put it under the stealing stuff category.
Stealing innovation. So Cedia is the International Trade Association for it used to be home theater installers,
mm-hmm.
but it's expanded now to a lot more. It was a lot of IoT stuff. I guess that's why you went, right?
That is why I went.
Well, I know you like home really theater cool installers. I mean, who doesn't?
Well, yes, they're lovely people.
However, you probably went for things like, you know, Jamie Siminoff and people like that who were there. So what did you see? Anything interesting?
You know, a couple things that are worth noting. First off, guys, I saw these gorgeous back-mounted OLED screens encased in glass. This is from LG. I think it's the picture actually under my podcast. Did that publish yet? Yes, it did. The Cedia podcast that's up on my site. So you can see a picture of it because it's freaking gorgeous. But it's $20,000, so we're not going to get that anytime
soon. How big
is
it?
I don't
she's
remember.
She's gesturing. Like, it's very big.
It's large.
Oh, that was Stacey's very big sound.
There it is. So, I mean, you can see there's a guy kind of in the background. He's probably about 3 feet away.
7 feet tall or something.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, no, it's not 7 feet tall.
It's 18 feet tall. It's probably 5 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because it's off the floor, I feel like when I looked at it, my eyes were a little like at her nose level.
What makes that so special?
Because it's gorgeous. Look how it's embedded in that glass. It's back to back. It's just a wonderful way of framing a television. So this is for high end and it's moving
image. It's for display.
High end retail display.
Yeah.
But imagine that in landscape. I'd hang that, you know, on my wall.
Well, there's some gorgeous TVs out there, I have to say. I have an LG 4K TV. I love it.
But there were lots of really cool other things that I saw. A lot of energy management systems. That's really getting hot, which is kind of exciting. Things that let you plug your generator. Is that the word I meant? You plug things into your breaker panel and then connect it to a battery. And then you can actually allocate during a power outage what gets to suck juice. And you do it from an app as opposed to having to hardwire things.
I need that because I want to get a power wall. If you had a power wall, then you Actually, you can do that with your Tesla because the Tesla is a power wall on wheels.
Right.
And you can use an inverter to use the Tesla to power your house should the power be out. I just need the whatever that doohickey is.
And do you also, so you don't power the entire house, Stacey? Are you saying you need smart plugs?
No. If it's tied into your breaker system, your breaker will just turn things off.
Oh,
but our system is, I mean, good God, the weird things that are connected to each other in this house.
Right. This is why this was at a professional installer show. This is not something I recommend you install yourself on your breaker.
Oh, God, no, not me.
Hey, breaking news. Martin Shkreli going to jail after his Facebook post about Hillary Clinton. A federal judge revoked his $5 million bail. He's the former hedge fund manager convicted of defrauding investors. He was the pharma guy who raised the price on the pill to a lot of money. And
he's trying to sell the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes,
CD
he bought an exclusive one time only copy of the new Wu-Tang Clan album, and now he's selling it on eBay, saying I kind of really didn't listen to it that much.
I need the money.
While waiting sentences, Shkreli has. Am I saying his name right? Shkreli. That's the worst name. Shkreli.
That's why he's like this.
Has harassed women online. Prosecutors argued, even offered his Facebook followers $5,000. To grab a strand of Hillary Clinton's hair during her book tour. He faces...
Was it grab a strand or yank her by the hair?
Oh, that's nice. That's good. His bond has been revoked. And the district judge, Kiyo Matsumoto, said he does not need to apologize to me. He should have apologized to the government, the Secret Service, and Hillary Clinton. This is a solicitation of assault that is not protected by the First Amendment. He was taken into custody immediately after the hour-long hearing. He will remain jailed until his sentencing hearing later this fall. So he was out on bail, but that bail has been revoked. Wow.
I don't feel bad about that at all.
He is really
a douche.
Yeah, I was thinking of a word beginning with D, not quite that, but...
I'm not sure if Carson, can I say that? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've said it already.
It's French for shower. It's okay. I'm going to France. I need to bone up on my French.
Où est la douche?
Pardon, monsieur. Où est la douche?
Prendre la douche.
Prendre la douche. Shkreli's attorney says, in this current political climate, dissent has unfortunately often taken the form of political satire, hyperbole, parody, or sarcasm. While we do not condone his comments... His constitutionally protected political hyperbole does not, that's what I do, constitutionally protected political hyperbole does not rise to the level of making him a danger to the community. But inciting violence makes others a danger.
Well, and think about what happened with, Gabby Giffords getting shot. And think about Republicans.
Good.
Even that crazy Democrat guy who went and ran out and shot Republicans
Congressmen. Hillary Clinton's book right now. And when you know who said, I hope the Second Amendment people take care of her.
Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible.
By the way, really pro tip.
That. Yeah. What happened?
I'm just saying what happened? You got to Audible that she reads it, which I love.
Yeah.
But you got to go to 1.5 speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have her talk very slowly.
Very. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just thinking of what's his name on HBO? Bill Maher's comment that anybody who hates Hillary Clinton must have been molested by a real estate saleswoman when he was young. I don't know. It just made me laugh. I don't know. Yeah, let's not do the material design stuff. Let's just not do that. It's actually really boring. In fact, I can't think of anything more boring than these material design award winners.
I gotta do a damn transition here to tease. I'm tired. I can't wait to get off.
That was a terrible tease.
Sure. What the heck?
That was the worst.
Is it actually materials design, like new chemicals? Or
No.
I was curious.
Material design is Google's name for the design style of Android, and it apparently...
Oh, kill me now. But did you see that... This is only funny because it's a hilarious journalism story, probably, but Fortune got a story about Google expanding its offices because they basically, their real estate developer emailed, or someone in the company emailed, a Fortune reporter as part of an email thread on Google buying these new office buildings. So one, Google's expanding and like buying $275 million worth of real estate. And two, the news came out because someone accidentally put a Fortune editor in the email chain. Oops. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, probably a good idea if you want to keep something secret, not to put a journalist in the CC field.
Yeah, but it happens. It happens more often than, not necessarily on something that big, but I get a lot of emails that are not for me, that are really not for me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Huh.
Do you ever report on them?
I've only had one that was worth reporting on. Most of them are just...
What would the ethics of that be?
I feel like it's pretty... It's a mistake, but sure.
It's, so like, I guess, you know, it's like if you stumbled on a phone in a bar and it you thought it was newsworthy, you could report on that. That's not... It's just... It was an accidental discovery.
Yeah, or some... I mean, if you're at a... there's been plenty of times when I've been at conferences that are not off the record. They're just technical and they just don't... They assume journalists won't be there, so they say more things.
Oh,
and then when I write
move.
Them...
Yeah.
The people are like, well... That was a conference, you know.
There were yeah, it was in public.
I'm like, it was in public. There, it wasn't confidential information. They knew I was there. Now, I feel like at some publications I've worked at, when you were doing any sort of, like, I don't even want to call it gotcha journalism.
Announce yourself.
You had to announce that you were a journalist, which sometimes, like Equifax is a good example. If I call them and say I'm a journalist trying to understand what consumers are going through right now, I might get a vastly different experience.
Yes,
so
yes.
Like there are some cases where I'm like, oh, I hate that rule.
Well, and I don't think it's a rule because any user can now call Equifax and say what's going on and then post on it and you can quote it. Everybody can
True,
attend but, journalism.
But I like to think that because of who I am and my history that people that I've enacted in public as a journalist, I have more credibility than Joe Schmo online when reporting about a user experience. Right
about
or wrong.
Everything, Stacey, about not everything, Stacy, about everything except the punctuation.
Except
yes,
everything.
You do.
The Oxford comma.
Yes, you do.
I mean, anybody can say this happened to them. And, you know, you'd be wise to check it out.
So if you have an Android phone in your possession, you might want to check
Blueborn
to see if you have the September security update. I checked my Pixel this morning. It was still on August. Now, this is going to be a waste of time, but let me just check the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. I bet you I'd be surprised if it has June's update. Let's see here. Software update. Download updates manually. Let's see if there's any update for mice. Anybody who has a Pixel, have you been updated? The fix is for a
When?
Soon. Like since,
so since
this morning.
When was this just morning?
Yes, recently.
Ooh.
About
what,
five.
What terrible, horrible thing could happen
get
to
ready
me
for this
not?
One. This is a good one. 5.3 billion devices are vulnerable. 2 billion of them are mm-hmm. Android, tablets, wearables, as well as phones. It's something called Blueborn. It was discovered yesterday by a security firm, Armis Labs. It takes advantage of the fact that most devices broadcast over Bluetooth, broadcast their availability.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Bluetooth connection on your device is active, you're vulnerable to this. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to
pair. It's an
over-the-air
attack.
It's an over-the-air attack. You just have to be within Bluetooth range, which is about 30 meters. The bad guy can use this attack to get full access to your phone. They actually demoed it on a Google Pixel showing the phone being remotely accessed. Apps like the camera and the file system can be accessed completely undetected by the user. In effect, you are fully pwned. Android devices that are vulnerable, the Pixel, the Galaxy, Galaxy Tab, LG Watch Sport, and the Pumpkin Car Audio System, which I am not familiar with.
Those are actually just examples.
They're examples because we're talking 2 billion Android devices, which is most of them. Google has pushed out a September security patch that takes care of it, But unfortunately, a lot of people won't get this.
Well, and they're only patching, is it
marshmallow
is it
really, and nougat? Yeah, 6 and 7.
Okay. I was going to say, are we really going with nougat?
Not me.
Okay.
I'm in America.
Oreo doesn't need it. Oreo
y'all.
Doesn't need it.
No. That's a good question. Does Oreo need it? I don't know. I guess not.
By the way, so in an Oreo, used to be you had that nice little thing you go to and say, am I up to date or not? Because we do that obsessively. I can't find it now.
Oh, it's there.
Where?
It's just in a different part. Here's a demo of Blueborn. Well, we'll just enjoy the... Here's on the left, the hacker screen. On the right, the device screen. The hacker, Wiley Hacker, is launching his Python 7 script. His pony
attempt. I really feel bad for hackers trying to make this interesting.
Poning done within 30 seconds. One attempt, one success. Doing stack memory leak. So it's once you get in, you have to take advantage of a memory leak. Devices that don't use ASLR are particularly vulnerable. But even though the Pixel uses ASLR, it's vulnerable.
Well, you could also implement a man-in-the-middle attack, too.
Nice. So here we go.
They're going to
see if they can get this attack going. They believe they'd hacked the device. And I guess apparently they have. Because they're waking up the phone. Yep, the phone got awakened. Replaying recorded mouse movement.
The phone is
woke. I was going to say the phone got woke.
Opening the camera app. Switching to the front camera, taking advantage of that very lovely person. They took a photo. Now can they? Yep, there's all the images in the storage. They're going to take it, and there's the image they want, and they're going to cat that out to themselves, to their IP address, and now they have that image. So within a minute. 1 minute and 32 seconds, they were able to take over this young woman's phone, snap a picture of her.
Don't presume the woman had the phone.
No,
woman could be evil.
That was the victim.
She could be the hacker.
I don't know who the hacker was. Could have been her as well, okay. But that was the victim. They took over her phone without her knowledge, snapped a picture of her, and sent it to themselves, all without her knowledge.
Oh, I see. It's a picture of her.
Yeah.
There is a Blueborn vulnerability scanner by Armis in the App Store, or not the App Store, the Google Play Store. And you can download it. You can both find out if your device is vulnerable, but you can also wander around and be like, hey, you at the bar, look here, your device is vulnerable. You can make lots of friends.
Yeah. Yeah. What am I supposed to do about that? Oh, there's nothing you can do. I just want to let you know. Oh.
Or Sheldon would do.
Thank goodness.
You could actually use it and then be like, oh, this is the perfect place to launch my attack.
My Blueborn attack.
Jeez. Either way.
So this is why these monthly security updates are so important. And unfortunately, very few phones support them. I am encouraged by Oreo and the new Treble architecture that this will... Google's doing everything I think it can to get everybody, even on the cheap Android devices that aren't usually updated, get everybody into an updated situation so that they can protect.
And we talked about this. So we talk about this on our show tomorrow, but... the Samsung was actually really distressing to me because this also affects Linux.
Yes.
So it's not just iOS.
Oh, no, it's not just Android. It's anything with Bluetooth. It's, yeah.
It is a lot of things. Windows, but Linux. And so Samsung's Tizen OS, which is on their televisions, their fridges, and other fun products, they actually never responded to Armis when Armis sent this out. And Armis apparently contacted Google and Apple in April. So they reached out to Samsung 3 times. Samsung never responded. So if you have a Samsung device that, has Bluetooth running, I mean, your smart TV, you may not actually even need it to have Bluetooth constantly broadcasting. I mean, you'd have to invite the hacker into your home for that to be taken advantage of, but I guess you could.
Yeah, that's the only mitigating factor is you have to be within Bluetooth range. But if you're at a coffee shop...
Bluetooth range all the time.
Right. If you're at a coffee shop or a train station or somewhere like that, I mean, you're vulnerable. It's not a good thing. Let's just say it that way. Let's take a break and talk about Equifax. We're almost done here.
Yeah.
Stacey Higginbotham. Hey. I am almost done here.
Like, wow.
I am so cooked. Stacey Higginbotham. She's here. She's from Stacey on IoT and the IoT Podcast, which you can find at iotpodcast.com. Also, Jeff Jarvis from CUNY. It's nice to have the gang back together again. So glad you are both here.
Then you desert us.
I'm going to leave. So Jason brief. Howell will do the show next week, right? And then the following week, is it Jason again or who's? Yeah, so Jason will be taking care of you.
I'm even coming up for Twit Sunday and you won't be there.
You're coming to town into the studio?
Wait. You ready, Leo? While you're gone, I was even going to come into the studio.
You guys do this on purpose. I know you do. You say, is Leo there? Okay, I'll wait.
Karsten, let me know when he's going on vacation.
So next week, next Twit, Jason Calacanis is hosting. You're going to be on that one, Jeff?
Yeah, I didn't know that when I said yes.
Oh, Jason's great. You're going to have a great time. Jason is a pistol. No, he's fun.
Yeah, no. Yeah, cocked and loaded.
Challenge him. That's fine. Get into it with him. That's great. You know, Jason and I have had our ups and downs, but I find him, he's very entertaining. I actually genuinely like the guy. Good. And when are you going to be here, Stacey?
I'm not now because I'm going to be in San Francisco. I'm not going to make the Petaluma Quest. Dun, dun, dun.
You know, people don't know this, but Jeff and I have had intimate relations. I've shaved him, but I've never met Stacey in person at all. And I don't think that's an accident.
Never?
No, never. No. Jeff and I think I met you, Jeff, once. But yes,
so memorable one, Stacey. Problem is, we go to too many conferences. You can't put somebody in a context.
Right.
You know?
You don't remember meeting Stacey?
Stacey doesn't remember meeting me.
Oh, you remember meeting her, but she doesn't remember. Yeah,
well, I think I met Jeff. I think we met at South By, but South By,
yeah. Oh, South By. I don't remember anything. If you remember South By, you weren't there.
Oh.
I think that's how the saying goes.
That's probably true.
Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. You know, we live in a world of lawyers, but you don't have to be paying them to get that legal advice. You can go to LegalZoom. When you run your own business, you know, who has the time, who has the money to do all this legal stuff, yet you still have to do your LLCs or your S-Corps. You still have to do your trademarks. And there's a lot of paperwork, but you can do a lot of it with LegalZoom without an attorney. 2 million people have used LegalZoom to start their businesses, including me. We got our trademarks through LegalZoom as well. It was very easy. Occasionally, though, you know, you do need an attorney. And the nice thing about LegalZoom, they're not a law firm, but they do have a network of independent attorneys. They've licensed in all 50 states that they've negotiated flat rate pricing with. It really makes it easy to get the advice you need for running your business. There's taxes, there's contracts, there's employees, there's a lot. You don't ever have to worry about billable hours with LegalZoom. It's not a law firm. You can count on upfront pricing, clarity, great information, the forms you need. Invest your time and money in growing your business and let LegalZoom help out with the legal stuff. For special savings, use the promo code TWIG at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom.com, the offer code TWIG, our little way of thanking you and thanking LegalZoom for supporting This Week in Google. Let's see here. I'm getting breaking news from the chat room. Oh, interesting. Nexus and Pixel factory images for September's security patch are up. This is about an hour ago. However, the Nexus player has not been updated. The OTAs were pushed yesterday. So if you didn't get, if you didn't get it yet, you could get it by hand or you could check again and again. But so that's.
I honestly cannot find the check for version on my Pixel.
I don't have my Pixel with me, or I'd help you find it. Isn't there a search though? You could always use the search in the settings.
What am I searching for? Version?
Try version. Let me look at what it looks like. I only have the note with me today. I didn't bring the Pixel. I wish I had. Search for system.
System.
Or security patch level.
Well, all that does is tell me the number. It doesn't give me it doesn't say, is it up to date? Click here.
Right. It's in about phone on the Samsung. I don't know where it is.
No, it's all.
Yeah, they moved it out.
Settings,
it wasn't in
system.
Settings, system.
System updates.
System updates. It's in its own section now.
Hold on. Settings, system. System updates. Ah, check for update. Thank you. Good work, man. That's why you have the guy from the Ivy League there.
Ivy You're League. Got to have a Harvard man ready at any time. Were you in the...
Here is now installing the update.
Oh, good. Yay.
Your phone will be useless for several minutes.
Yeah, but at least you won't
Bula,
be...
Bula, fella.
You won't be Blueborn. No. That's Yale.
Oh, that's the wrong place, though.
The wrong place.
Whiff and poof. Whiff and
poof. No, that's
poof,
also Yale.
Also the
Oh, all right.
Then if you say anything about the tables down at Maury's, that's three strikes. You'll be out. Our let's talk about...
1%.
1%. Raw. Yes. White privilege is us. Let's talk a little bit about Equifax, shall we?
I'm going to have a question.
Ask me.
Brian's been covering this so well in his Krebs on Security. The latest from Brian Krebs is that he checked out the Argentinian affiliate of Equifax. And it's so funny. This actually, his information comes from Alex Holden of Hold Security. Apparently, the website, Equifax website in Argentina, and they call it their employee portal, they call it Veraz or Truthful in Spanish. And it's now down, thank goodness. The login and password for the site was admin, which is probably the first one you'd guess. Once inside, researchers were able to log in and they could view the names of more than 100 Equifax employees in Argentina, their employee IDs and email addresses. There was a list of users page featuring a clickable button that anyone with the admin username and password could use to add, modify, or delete user accounts on the system. They then found a list of people who had disputes with the credit reporting agency. And it listed 715 pages worth of complaints and disputes. And in each case, it had the person's DNI, which is their Argentinian social security number, in plain text. 14,000 records, name and social. This was all publicly available. All you had to do was guess the password, admin. So Equifax is not exactly... Holy cow. They're not exactly escaping this unscathed. Let's put it that way.
Oh, my God. They so are. And the audacity that they have to behave the way they did is just.
So let's talk about it. We spent some time talking about it yesterday, too, on Security Now. It was a data breach that had occurred some months ago. Equifax said we discovered it July 29th. Before they told us, though, they made sure that any executives who wanted to sell their Equifax stock got to. Three executives, including their CFO, sold off Equifax stock worth millions of dollars. They said later, they didn't know. They didn't know. They just decided to sell stock all of a sudden. Personal data, including birth dates, credit card numbers, and more obtained by hackers for 143 million U.S. customers. Then Equifax added insult to injury by putting up a website that you could ostensibly go to and find out if you were one of those people whose information was leaked. Seemed to do nothing. It randomly picked. You could enter any number or name and it would, pick a random choice. Yes, you were hacked. No, you weren't hacked. Maybe you were hacked.
Come back later.
Yeah. It was random.
Please
check back again
another time.
Yeah. And then this is where they really, I'm sure this is what insulted you. It sent you to a free 1-year credit monitoring service of theirs, which of course won't be free in a year. So they're going to try to make money on this breach. And, now, I don't think this is germane, but some complained that the agreement that you agreed to when you signed up for their free credit monitoring service said you couldn't sue them. But
it's true. It was a binding arbitration clause that you signed up for.
Right.
And
Equifax
we all
says
know how.
That applies only to the credit monitoring and not to the breach. I mean, you'd be foolish to have anything to do with Equifax anyway.
So, nobody has a choice. Equifax just hoovers up all this data and sells it to people. So it's not like it's not like any normal person's like, I think I'm going to do business with Equifax today.
No.
It's an invisible data broker.
I should say do any more business with them. Don't go to their site at all.
But you You have to, because the best way to.
No, you don't. That gives you no information.
So you have to deal with them because you're going to need to put a freeze on your account.
Exactly. In that respect, you should deal with them. Yes. You shouldn't go to this Am I Hacked site.
No, I mean, well, it's gotten better, but they do not make it clear. They, for a company, this to me shows how corrupt the American system is in so many ways that these guys actually said, hey, we just really screwed up on this one. So we're gonna sell our stock first, and then we're gonna deal with it by coming up with things that are the bare minimum, and we're gonna piss off a bunch of consumers with like the crappiest web design, poor hosting, and just complete and utter idiocy. It's really stunning.
So you're saying people should go, and I don't know if everybody needs to do this, but you're saying people should go to the big three, and maybe the fourth, there's another one, Innovus, credit reporting agencies, and put out a credit freeze.
So the pros and cons of doing a credit freeze are you have to do it. You have to call them all individually. There are fees. Equifax says that it will not charge its fees to people freezing their credit after this. If they were really good,
I want to correct that. There are fees in some states. Some states, it's up to the state legislature. The state legislature mandates the fees. In California, it's $10 per agency to freeze and unfreeze. But in some states like Maine and Wisconsin, it's free. So it may be free for for you.
It was free for me.
I had to freeze.
Yeah.
So, but when you do a freeze, it takes time to do and it takes time to undo. So you can't apply for credit if you have the freeze, or you can apply. It just won't get it. And a notable thing is, you know, this iPhone coming out, I believe the Apple monthly payment program. So sometimes your cell carriers or to buy a phone.
Yeah, a lot of times people pull credit reports that you don't even know. If you're applying for a job, that may happen.
But if you're renting an apartment, that
may happen.
Yes.
You know, and yes, cell phone companies very routinely pull credit history.
So, and if you undo your freeze, you're going to have to pay sometimes, not everyone, to put it back on. So this is terrible.
It's non-trivial. You can do a fraud alert. It's really not much particularly effective. It just let you know if somebody's trying to get a credit card in your name. Basically, people complain about privacy with Facebook and Google, but we've got these companies that's one and only job is to collect every bit of information about you they can and sell it to people without your participation.
They shouldn't exist. These companies basically shouldn't exist.
Wait a minute, though. Don't they have to? I mean, honestly, if you're going to have a credit, if people are going to extend you credit, there needs to be some organized way to find out if you're credit worthy.
We'll do a star rating system.
Who will do it? That's what your FICO score is. But who will do it? Somebody's got to do this. And by the way, you agree to it every time you take out a loan or you get a credit card. In the fine print, it says you agree that we'll submit every bit of information about you, including your payment history, to Equifax, TransUnion. And
so this is an area where regulation is important, because clearly,
yes, I agree.
The way we have set up our economy around credit, you know, it has become a valuable tool, and you have to regulate these. And what's astonishing to me is the lack of regulation for something that actually Congress has given a lot of, what's it called? When you talk about something, but you don't do anything about
it? Lip service.
Lip service. I was like, lipstick on the pig. They've given a lot of lip service to this. They've held actually a lot of hearings about it. And every time the rules come in weaker than expected.
Well, it's ironic, but Equifax was lobbying hard and paying a lot of money to campaign funds to get this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau dismembered and to change the rules so that they weren't as accountable. I mean, they hate this.
Because the bare minimum that they have to comply with today is so inconvenient to their making gobs of money without any sort of responsibility or accountability. Which is, I'm not going to get on this because it is not. Anyway, okay. That's the Equifax story.
So here's what my question, and I've said this on the show before, but I still don't understand. aren't we looking at this the wrong way? We know there are going to be breaches of data. There have been breaches of data. Half of America is now breached. There's going to be breaches of data. The problem is the other end of it. People with that data should be able to do nothing with it, which means that what we have to fix is transactions.
Blockchain.
Two-factor, call it what you will, but that one way or the other, we've got to change the transactional structure so that if you have my name and social security number, who cares? You can't do jack with it. Birth date, mother's maiden name, right? Obviously, there's problems for phishing. Obviously, there's problems where you can fool an individual. Obviously, an idiot on an important account can have a bad password. That's always going to be true. But even then, if you have two-factor, if you have other structures, if you change the level of transactional security, Leo, I wish Steve were on because he knows a lot more about this than I do, but you're the next best thing.
Yeah, I mean, so I've pulled up a paper from the Federal Reserve Bank on the history of credit reporting. We haven't always had these credit bureaus. In fact, they didn't really begin until this century. The credit reporting industry started in the 50s and 60s, and it was very industry-specific. So a banking industry would have somebody kind of compile files on people. By the way, they would look for newspaper clippings about arrests or promotions or marriages and deaths, and they would be attached to a consumer's credit report. It wasn't until the 70s that an industry, this Equifax, TransUnion, Experian industry began. And the passage of the Fair Credit Reporting Act in the 70s did actually, as you know, I mean, we have a lot of protections with these agencies. We can see our credit history. We can ask for our credit report once a year for free. We can amend it. We can put notes on it. We can ask for it to be corrected. They stopped putting marriages, promotions, and deaths in the file. They were limited in what they could collect. Experian was originally TRW. You know that name. Mm-hmm. TransUnion. And then Equifax, all kind of were created in the 70s. I think you need something like this. Credit is, I mean, really important. It's actually one of the great inventions of capitalism. It wasn't, I'm reading a book about this, and it was fascinating that in the Middle Ages, remember, it wasn't considered reputable to lend money.
Right.
Because there was no expectation of growth. It was felt that it was a zero-sum gain, and that anybody's success was at somebody else's debt to somebody else's detriment. They didn't understand the notion of value creation. So nobody lended money. It was Shylock, right? And it was usurious rates. And it was
it was a Christian thing.
It wasn't considered Christian to do it. Like, we had to make the Jewish people do it. The tribe was responsible for it. But when it notion of capital investment and venture investment and lending was created, it created immense wealth and immense value. So it is a very valuable system. And you can understand why there would need to be some way of proving or demonstrating that you were credit worthy. Otherwise, how would you go to a bank and ask for a loan for $100,000?
There's nothing wrong with credit. There's nothing wrong with credit data. If it's transparent, it doesn't screw up. What's wrong? So there's nothing wrong with people having data about you. They're going to have that data. My point is that what was wrong?
It's
here
well
was,
known
was
how to secure. It's well known how to secure that. So right. So this has been proposed. Actually, Cory Doctorow had a funny column in Boing Boing that said there should be a death penalty for corporations. That sometimes corporations should commit crimes so heinous that they should be just dissolved. The government should say, you know what, you're out of business. I don't know if I agree with that, but there definitely need to be very strong punishments for not treating data like this securely. And by the way, I believe it is known how to secure this data.
Leo, you're still not.
But what's your question?
My question is the opposite. Let us presume data will be breached, period. The problem with it is what can the bad guy then do with the data? The bad guy can, that's what we have to secure, is the other end of this problem.
He's saying when the data gets out there.
How many times we have to get breaches before there's going to be breaches? Somebody's going to mess that up. There's going to be breaches.
Well, it's kind of a done deal.
Exactly.
You should, this is why you shouldn't go to the Experian website. You should just assume that your credit cards and your phone numbers and your socials
out there. Why do we fear the data being out there? What can be done with that data? What do we do about that?
Yeah, so there's identity theft where somebody assumes your identity, applies for credit using your social and your birth date. You have good credit, but they don't intend to ever pay any of these credit cards off or pay off any of these loans. So they use your good credit to generate a lot of fraudulent loans.
Right.
And your credit is destroyed. So
right.
That's one way.
Jeff is saying, he is asking what can be done to make this information, which today can be used to do all of that, useless.
Worthless.
So what do
worthless.
You add yes. to it? So
what
can
do you add to the transaction?
How do you
transaction
add friction to the friction
right.
to the basically
so,
creation
so better
of a
authentication
credit card.
Systems would be good. Obviously, the government even says do not use your social for identification. But we've
everyone
gotten a system where everybody does that, right? So that
and
is a number
it,
that
yeah.
is difficult to change. By the way, your fingerprint is impossible to change. It is also now being widely used for identification. Both of these are very bad ideas. But I'm not sure if we have any better ideas. By the way, authentication is the number one issue in finance, in everything, is proving you are who you say you are. It's why passwords don't work, because that's an authentication system. It's why we've got this problem, because it's very difficult, absent an in-person meeting. And even then, you can impersonate me. It's very difficult to authenticate somebody's identity. I don't know. You would chip them? I don't know. There is no system.
Not even authentic. So can we add like two-factor to it? So I apply for
yes.
a credit card. And then and this actually happens when you implement a credit freeze. You actually have to call them ahead of time. They run the credit card report, and they actually will call you again and say, hey, this happened. Was it you?
I think it's very hard to think. I understand your question. I just think it's very hard to think of a system that of perfect authentication, because that's what you need.
But better.
Well, you don't need perfect authentication. You need multiple layers of imperfect authentication that together cover the CYA.
And increase the cost and the risk for the bad
where
guy.
Where does that
it becomes not
so
worth
let's
it.
Say you say, I need you to have your social and I need a fingerprint and I need a password. Where is all that stored? There's going to be a central repository that's stored. That's the problem. Your authentic. This is that's the real problem is that Equifax had your authentication information. All of it.
I think there are steps that you can do. You can do
you'd
things
need,
that
you need two agencies, maybe three.
Yeah.
And you'd have to hope that a bad guy didn't. Yeah, that a bad guy didn't compromise all three.
Yeah, I mean that is a lot harder. I mean that's basically where all security needs to go is recognizing that anything centralized will break. That's why blockchain is right. so interesting. I mean,
my point is that authentication is everybody knows this is the issue.
Right.
And everybody's working on good systems of authentication.
But I see so little work on it.
Well yeah, but there is a lot of work being done.
There's a lot of work. The challenge is everything sucks from a convenience and security is.
There's a trade-off. That's right.
So, and then there's also standardization. You can't have something, you have to get it adopted by the entire industry.
Here's what I would argue, and I think this is the argument that's current. This is the situation we currently live in. Doing it right is far more expensive than what we have right now, which is allowing a certain amount of fraud to occur.
Well,
it's the same reason banks don't really report breaches. It's cheaper to pay off the loss and continue business as usual than to fix the problem.
That's interesting.
So I would, and I think that's part of, this is a little bit of a tempest in a teapot because, well, we'll see in a couple of years if there's a massive uptick in identity theft. I bet there won't be. People are freaking out that their information's out there, but it may not have a huge consequence. From a philosophical point of view, it's a bad thing. It's a terrifying thing. But it may not actually be so consequential. And it's certainly the case that doing it right would be very difficult, expensive, and inconvenient. You could have,
this
you
is
could
where
use PGP
the Germans-
keys. I mean, you could use, you know what, a good solution for this. I mean, PGP is a very good authentication system and the web of trust. There are systems. But it's really a pain in the ass. I use it. If you get email from me, it's usually PGP signed to verify that it came from me and it hasn't been modified. And you can, if you were running PGP, which nobody does, you could then look at that and validate it and say, oh, that came from Leo.
Well, how many efforts, and PGP or some equivalent could be made safe for consumers. That's an area where I've been frustrated that no one's ever done it.
It could be done easily. Each of you, each of us would have two keys, a public key and a private key.
Yes.
You would tell everybody your public key so that they could use that to encrypt data to you, which only you could decrypt. But the keys can also be used for authentication. You can give out your public key. If somebody says, oh, hi, Jeff, I have your public key here. Can you authenticate? Can you prove to me that it's you? And you run it through a program that says, yes, Jeff has the private key. Now, you would have to keep the private key private.
Mm-hmm. And you could mess that up.
Well, and you can, and there's ways to fix that too. You require expiration every year. You have to generate a new one, and you need a key revocation system. This has actually been a problem on the web with certificates. There isn't a good key revocation system because it's been deemed too difficult to do well. It would slow your browser down too much.
You know, my hope is that a really smart company like Google should do this, but if they can't figure out two accounts within their own email system, then
I know. No, I think people are really working on this, but. The cost of doing it probably outweighs, at least so far, the losses.
Okay, but here's one piece of that is that at some level, I as a consumer, what do we have now? We have all these scary commercials on Sirius saying that your identity is going to be stolen and your mortgage is going to be stolen and everything. So there's a huge industry of fakers. Who sell you a fake insurance because it's cheaper for them because they're gonna take all your grandparents and your parents and they're gonna make you pay for this stupid service that actually doesn't do anything because it happens so rarely. So there is a cost to the economy right now of taking advantage of old people and fools who buy these services.
Nobody denies there's a cost. Just as Sony decided we're not gonna spend money to secure our
right,
studio.
But then there's another way to look at this, which is that rather than buying that scary service, I could choose to go to the inconvenience or the expense as an individual to say, steal my data. I don't care because I know that everything is okay. What would that look like, right? And then what you're going to see happening down the line, I think, is you're going to see that being added on as a benefit to credit cards and other things to make sure you're secure or there's consumer value. But right now, there's no choice. There's no way. There's no mechanism to do that. So we sit here and we all say, uh-oh, it all got stolen. I don't know. It's going to hit me. May hit me.
Yeah, but we might overstate the threat. I mean, banking rules changed so that you couldn't lose more than $50 on your credit card, right? That made everybody happy. The credit card companies knew that they were covering their losses with a high interest rate. They knew that their losses wouldn't exceed their revenue, so they were okay. You were okay because you knew your losses would be limited.
But now you're not okay. I mean, your credit... Your losses on the credit card are nothing compared to your losses from identity theft and the time and effort it takes to clean that up. And as that happens to more people, there are external costs that are borne by employers, by insurers, and by even, you know, municipalities that we will have to pay for somehow, somewhere. And it's not going to be as simple as forking over money to one entity. And that's, I mean... Security, a lack of focus on security is going to start becoming a huge externality that we need to deal with.
At some point, we'll hit a tipping point. Here's the stats on identity theft and fraud complaints. And as you can see, they are going up. In 2016, $16 billion was stolen from 15.4 million U.S. consumers. I don't know if that's identity theft. Or credit card, I think that would include credit card fraud as well, and other things. So two things can happen. Somebody can defraud you by using your credit, but far more common is they steal your credit card. Right, it's a lot easier for a bad guy.
And the credit company loses, and then you report it in time, and the credit company loses money.
Yeah, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Maybe the merchant. Now the merchant gets dinged. It didn't used to be. Whoever has the least security gets dinged. The merchant may end up spending the bulk of the cost. But it's spread out to the point where nobody's freaked out.
But start thinking about what happens. Oh,
go ahead.
Go ahead, Jeff. Okay.
I was going to channel you, Stacey. This is a need for regulation. consumer protection. But
then there is, by the way, there's a lot of regulation in this. That's why you don't.
And it's not just consumer protection. There are real, like, if my identity is stolen and I have a very good credit rating. So I am a lovely consumer for lots of people. I can go buy a house. I can go do all this. But imagine now that I've put a credit freeze on my account, suddenly I'm less likely to go. I'm only going to get credit on things that really matter, like a house. And so there's a lot of things that I'm just not going to buy if I can't buy it outright.
An interesting statistic. Most of this information misuse has been used to get government benefits. 49%. 15% credit card fraud, 10% phone or utilities fraud, 5.9% bank fraud. Attempted identity theft, 3.7%. Loan fraud, 3.5%. So the almost half is somebody just saying, I want to get a Social Security.
Wait, payment. is that someone's, so is that stolen from like buying it online, or is that something like, because a lot of really crappy parents use their kids or
right.
Use their kids' social.
I know. I don't know if they, this is complaints.
Okay.
This is based on the complaints.
Got it.
Identity theft and fraud complaints for 2015. So I would say if it's a parent stealing their kids' stuff, there probably was no complaint filed. But maybe the government filed a complaint eventually.
No, the government can file a complaint. Right. Or right. Taking someone's government benefits from a Social Security theft seems like, I guess it takes all kinds. It doesn't seem like it'd be super lucrative.
Yeah,
but I guess if you got a bunch of people.
I think that's kind of, I guess what's interesting about these numbers is it's clearly not reached the level of concern yet, or we would do something about it.
Yeah.
I think we're getting there.
I think we may be getting there. But it's infuriating. Because Equifax had a higher duty to protect us and did not.
Yes.
They didn't even show much shame or regret or
not
remorse.
That's the worst of it.
They didn't do their job. They had one job. If they're going to collect that information to protect the information, they clearly didn't do a very good job of that. But the consequences may not be, I think that's really what happens. Once the consequences of the financial industry is high enough, they'll figure out a solution. I think there are solutions out there. Interestingly, cybercrime complaints have actually been going down a little bit. They were higher in 2011.
I wonder if that's because people. What is a cybercrime complaint?
The
what does that entail?
Internet Crime Complaints Center. I don't know what that is. Top 10 states by percent of U.S. cybercrime victims, 14% from California.
I mean, that could be I sent somebody in Nigeria, my bank account. Or it could be, that could be stalking someone on Facebook. I don't know. Cybercrime?
This page is from the triplei.org, the Insurance Information Institute. And a lot of these numbers come from reputable sources, including the Federal Trade Commission. So
who's reputable anymore?
I know. I know. Everybody's got an axe to grind. It's all fake news.
You know, Leo, could be worse. Could be worse. You could be Denny's.
I could be eating the early bird special at Denny's right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I'm on my way.
You have seen, haven't you?
I have what?
You haven't seen?
No, what happened?
Denny's has a new mascot.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
He's not named Leo, is he?
No. It's worse than that. It's not on the rundown.
Denny's mascot. Oh, my God. It's a sausage.
No, it's poop.
Oh, it's a dookie.
Yes. The entire internet is going crazy because Denny's mascot
Here's the
is
tweet.
Poop.
The Denny's turd is here with lunch. Oh, Lord. Oh, Denny's.
That's even worse than Bodega.
What is it supposed to be?
I have no idea, but it's a turd. You can't not see the turd now.
It's a turd with a megaphone.
It's got to be a breakfast link, right?
It's a breakfast link.
Oh, man.
Actually, he's been around since 2014.
Oh, he has?
Yeah, but the social media stardom just happened.
Just hit. Oh, well,
just hit.
Oh, boy. See what happens.
Wow. Well, I've learned something today. I don't know what it is.
I can bring the show down anytime.
It could be worse. He could be named Little Leo.
Yes.
The missing link. That's pretty funny. He's this spring he introduced Denny's on Demand. His name is Sausage.
Really?
Yeah. You want to watch the video?
Nope. I want to get to our things because I am hungry and I have to go to the bathroom.
All right.
Instead, you're about to lose your. Well, I thought you were going to lose your appetite here.
Well.
Nope.
Before, let's do it. Why don't we do it, Stacy? What is your thing?
Wait. Do you have an ad?
Or should we commercial?
No, I did the ads.
Oh, okay.
Three? Well,
hot diggity.
I'm all caught up. All three of them.
All right. Oh, I can't find the link to it, but this is, now I'm not prepared.
Oh, you
are. I was
not
ready for such a quick transition.
All right. I was going to make my thing the Note 8, but I guess I've kind of already talked about it. The only flaw at all is the weird fingerprint reader, but it's a beautiful phone. Yeah, okay. Second flaw. You're right. It's tall. It's weirdly tall, but much like the Samsung Galaxy S8. In fact, it's really pretty much identical to the S8 Plus with the exception of a dual lens camera, which is quite good. And it has the zoom just like the Apple iPhone 7 Plus and a stylus that lets me write down, you know, notes even without unlocking the phone. I'm a Note fan. I have been since day one. It's got a Type-C charger and it has a headphone jack. And I'm going to take it to Europe with me. Even though I can't use Google Fi with it, which is too bad. Wish I could. Aww. Wish I could. Now, Stacy, right. Did I stall long
now,
enough?
No, you did. That was beautiful. All right. So I got to get us on the thingy. All right. Behind me is a light.
A lamp.
This is the new Sylvania Smart Plus LEDs. Now, this one that I've linked to, is that works with Amazon Echo and Google Home. This one that I'm playing with works with the HomeKit.
Oh, nice.
So
finally.
Yes.
Were you disappointed? That was cool.
Okay. So
drop her lower third. It not only changed the light, it changed the lamp.
Oh, that's just because it's a glass lamp.
Oh.
It's a blue glass lamp.
It's pink now.
Okay. Well, there you go. It's so fancy.
Fancy. So, you look like Happy Hot Point demonstrating that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Jeff does.
Good. It's good. Should we look up Happy Hot Point?
Yeah, you know who Happy Hot Point was. Okay.
I'm going to show you how this works on HomeKit.
Yes.
So this is dimming.
Ooh.
There goes
Were
it
Were you disappointed dimmed. That Apple didn't say anything about the HomePod at their
end? I was very sad. I felt like maybe this is bad news for the HomePod. And it does 1600 RGB colors. And
wait a minute.
The hub.
It does. That's a strange number.
1600, 16,000.
It doesn't do 16,000. Must do 16,000.
16,000. That's what I meant. Sorry. Yeah. Too many zeros.
Yeah.
I'm looking at something else.
16,252 to be exact.
Ooh, and it even gets my favorite color, which is that turquoise that the original hues didn't do. This used to be very difficult. Now it's not. So this is the Sylvania. It's a reasonably priced hubless light bulb. And it is available coming next Tuesday.
65,536. 2 to the 16th colors. That's my guess. Could be just 1600. I don't know.
And you can control it via Siri.
Can you say, give me a blue?
I believe so. I did all this last week and then I left home and forgot
all
about
it. Do you like this better than the Hue?
This is nice because it doesn't have a hub.
Actually, it's 2 to the 8th. It's 16,000. There you go. I gave it too many colors. 2 to the 8th.
I mean,
Never mind.
Your biggest test in LEDs is usually the turquoise.
How many bits is it? Two to the 16th, right? Yeah. Yeah. No. 2 to the 15th.
It is a, this one is
2,768. That's
Man's needs a vacation.
2 to the 15th.
All right. For the people asking, I'm going to answer your question while Leo goes off in his little binary challenge.
Is it Zigbee or Z-Wave?
It is Bluetooth.
What? And
What? I know. What? This is Bluetooth, so it works directly with your iPhone. And then the Amazon one, I believe, is Wi-Fi, which is why it doesn't need a hub. If it had Zigbee, it would need a hub.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Could be 2 to the 13th. That'd be 8,192. Or 2 to the 12th. That'd be 4,096. But I think it's 2 to the 14th, 16,384. That'd be my guess. That'd be definitely 2 to the 14th. Definitely.
Sheldon would know.
Sheldon would know. Definitely 2 to the 14th.
Oh, wait. This one. Okay. So the, I'm sorry. I lied to you. The one that I linked to, which is, so the HomeKit one is Bluetooth. The one that I linked to is actually Zigbee.
Oh, so,
so you have to work with the Echo, you have to use a hub. I'm so sorry, you guys. See, this one is the Smart Plus that talks about HomeKit.
This is why IoT is in trouble.
Is a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
But I trust no one to tell me what
thank
Happy
God
Hot
we,
Point.
Thank God we have Happy Hot Point.
We have Happy Hot Point. Rundown, you saw it.
Siri, schedule my living room lights to turn on at 6 p.m. tonight in a lovely blue shade.
That's cool. That is too much for Siri today.
Siri says, screw you.
That's too much for anybody. The only company that can do that is a company called Josh.ai, but they're professional. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And who is this Josh?
Who is this Josh? It is a company called Josh AI. They built their own voice recognition. Oh!
I have a better one. Now, Stacey, do you know who that is? Someone we
know. Patty Duke?
Nope.
Close.
All right.
Close.
Julie Andrews?
No.
Close.
I don't know.
You'd be happy to be associated with this person. She's wonderful. Love.
Actually, you kind of remind me of her.
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moore was Happy Hot Boy.
Oh.
That's her dancing. And there I am.
Wow.
Wow. Aren't you sorry you work with two old men?
Oh, yes. For many reasons.
I'm like, I'm not going to lie. There are times where I'm like, I'm questioning my choices right now.
It's as bad as it could get. It's really as bad as it can get.
But you can't get mad about Mary Tyler Moore. It's impossible.
No. No. Who are those guys on the Muppets?
Oh, the critics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's who you got.
Those who are my favorite people.
Oh, see? No wonder you like working with us.
There we go. Glutton for punishment.
So without further ado, Mr. Statler, do you have a review?
Well, I'm gonna cheat here because I think I found this so charming and wonderful that, and there's a little video if you want it in photo. Alexis Ohanian, and you know who? Gee, who is his fiance?
Oh, the tennis player,
Serena.
Serena, is it Serena?
Serena.
Which, it's one of the Serena. Serious?
They named their daughter. They named their daughter, who's a daughter, mind you, Alexis Ohanian Jr. Think about it.
And there she is at 8 p.m. So
she's named after him, but she's a girl. It's kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
It takes a while. You might want to go toward the
mother is the most beautiful. He's Snapchatting this while he's driving.
Yeah, that's probably not that's great.
Yeah. Oh. So the founder of Reddit and world champion tennis player Serena Williams and a baby named Alexis. Oh.
There she is.
This is why. Oh, she had the baby. Oh.
Yeah, she had the baby. It's a girl named adorable. Alexis who's named after. Oh. So it's Alexis September Olympia 1st. Ohanian Jr.
6 pounds, 14 ounces. And
that's really going to suck for her in this world of title. Alexa.
I know. Do not name your child anything with an A-L-E-X at all. Don't do it. Don't do it. Thank you, friends and neighbors. Lots of fun
bon
today.
Bon voyage, Leo.
Jason Howell will be in for me in the next couple of weeks. I hope you will have a wonderful time. Look forward to having you in studio on Sunday with Jason Calacanis. That'll be fun.
I'm coming into San Francisco, and then your ever alert Ivy League producer said, "Oh,
I'm thrilled.
You do Twit?
Fantastic. Thank you."
Yeah. So I'm going to go up straight up from the airport to your place and then back.
Find Jeff at CUNY, the City University of New York, where he teaches journalism at buzzmachine.com. And his great books, including Public Parts, What Would Google Do?, Geek Sparing News, are available at Final News. Find your newsstands everywhere.
If you could find one.
Good luck finding one. I loved that. I was watching HBO's The Deuce, and they had they faked Times Square, which was very well faked. And they had, remember the newsstand that said Optimo Cigars in front of it? It was there. It was like, wow.
Wow.
I remember that from 1971. It was worth seeing. Stacey Higginbotham, she is fabulous. The host, she puts up with us every week. That's got to be something. Host of Stacey on IoT with Kevin Toefel, which is recorded right before the show, but comes out every Thursday. Is that right?
Yes, it comes out Thursday. I don't have Karsten. I don't have a crack team.
Oh, you need a Karsten. Everybody needs a Karsten.
I know. Teaching me how to pronounce words correctly.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to you anymore.
Nope. Cuneiform. That's chew. You can also catch Stacey's newsletter. In fact, you must subscribe to Stacey's newsletter, as I do. You'll find it at stacyonIoT.com. Thank you, Stacey. We do Twig every Wednesday, about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Stop by, say hi. If you do, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. But, of course, you can get on-demand versions anywhere you get your podcasts. In fact, here's a sharp idea. Subscribe. That way you'll get it each and every episode. Have a great one. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.